Welcome to the Penny Bloom Podcast. Ain't another place that has got more bombast. Romp past your mom, dad's listening to Tomcast. Talking everything that make you sad. We don't want that. We're here to make you smile. Put your mind at ease. Peace, love, and bloom, and always praise Keanu Reeves. This what we about. Get some weed and now. We'll talk until we can't no more, and then we peacing out. Alright, let's go. Penny Bloom Podcast. It's the Penny Bloom Podcast. Penny Bloom Podcast. It's the Penny Bloom Podcast. Penny Bloom Podcast. Penny Bloom Podcast.
Penny Bloom.
Hello, everybody, and welcome in to Winter is Blooming, a Game of Thrones rewatch podcast by us, the Penny Bloom Podcast. Today is Season 8, Episode 2, the 69th episode of Game of Thrones. Nice.
Yay, okay.
It is titled A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, written by Brian Cogman, the Cogman, and directed by David Nutter, the Nutman. We got a double. Oh. We got a Cogman and a Nutman.
Wow, they went hard for 69. Oh, that's incredible.
They got the Nutman in there for episode 69,
mm-hmm.
Which they needed to. I'm Colton Robertson. I'm joined by Joseph George. What's up?
Oh, what up, what up? It is always a pleasure to be here.
Oh, and it is always a pleasure to have you. And this is a particularly fond, I'm particularly fond of this episode in terms of my memory of watching it for the first time and kind of being like, the calm before the storm, that ramp up. We were like, when we were first watching season 8, I don't know if you'll remember, but they're like going into it, we knew episodes 3 and 5 were like the, you need
That's
to
right.
watch this. You need
that
to watch
known.
This on the biggest screen possible. You need to watch this as this, you need to make those the perfect viewings. So you kind of knew that 3 was, you didn't know exactly what that entailed, but as we're getting here, you kind of realize 3 is the battle of Winterfell, and that calm before the storm, the anticipation, it's palpable. It's fucking wonderful. I love this episode of Thrones. How are you feeling about it?
Yeah, no, it was nice. It kind of felt like a, not necessarily a fan service, but more of like a service to the actors, like and everybody. I don't know. Kind of both. I guess it works both ways. But this felt just like a, we've come such a long way. Look at all these people we have here. Let's have one nice episode before we absolutely unleash hell next episode.
And because for the rest of the show.
Yeah, yeah. This is one of very few, I would say, of episodes where no one dies at all. Like, not even like a nameless new person that Arya That's just, true. You know, kills or any, like, no one dies. Zero people. And that's, no that's pretty rare. Pretty
that's
rare for
that
Thrones.
That would be an interesting little factoid is how many episodes of Game of Thrones out of the 70, what, 4, 73?
Have zero deaths
in them. Not many. It can't be many. But yeah, that's
no
this is at least the first one in some time.
At the bottom of all the you know, outlines, it always has the death section, but there's just no, there isn't one. Which is just very weird to see. It's always there.
Blank.
So
yeah.
Just very weird, but
It's a nice, quaint episode. And, you know, you said it's not strictly fan service. I think that what this episode does is actually everything that Beyond the Wall wanted to do with its interactions. The Suicide Squad episode where it was like, here's Tormund the Hound talking for a second, and Beric and Jon, and Jorah and Jon, and all these different people interacting in the same place at the same time. Wow, it's so cool, but we're not going to really spend any time with that. This episode is basically nothing but that, and it's very, very pleasing. They let the interactions breathe. They let everyone have their moment. They let every performer perform. It's very nice. I enjoy it a great deal, and I'm excited to get into it. So if you are ready, I can begin. the episode breakdown with only one location in Winterfell.
This is true. Yeah, we're at home, or yeah, closest to home in Thrawn. I don't know. It felt natural to call it home.
I would say this is home in Thrones. This is where the show starts. It's where the show ends.
If I could choose a home, maybe Dorne or somewhere in Essos.
I would not choose Winterfell as my home if I lived in Westeros. However, when it comes to the show, I would consider this home base.
Yes, yeah. And everyone is forced here right now because they are about to, you know, come face to face with the Army of the Dead. They are forced to be here. They don't have really a choice.
Not a lot of choice here. Not a lot of choice.
But yeah, all right. Let's.
But yeah, we how we start. Pick up right off the end of last episode when Jaime arrived in Winterfell, and he stands before Daenerys Targaryen and a council consisting of Sansa, Bran, Jon, and a couple others. But she begins, Daenerys, by saying that when she was a child, her brother would tell her a bedtime story about the man who murdered their father. He told her other stories as well about all the things they would do to that man once they took back to the Seven Kingdoms and had him in their grasp. Daenerys remarks to him that Cersei had pledged to send her army north, but all she sees is one man with one hand. And it appears Cersei lied. And Jaime makes it clear that Cersei lied to him as well. You know, I thought that's what we were doing. Mm-hmm. She made it clear that we were never going to do that. And I decided to stick by my oath. I decided to come up here. And Jaime tells her that Cersei has Euron Greyjoy's fleet and 20,000 fresh troops in the form of the Golden Company, providing a lot of info. He's officially like, I'm not fighting for her anymore. I can't. I quite literally can't go back either. Probably.
He would be
killed. What he thinks right
probably.
Now.
Yeah.
And then by the end of two episodes from now, after he's had an entire night spent with Brienne and everything, he decides to go back. That's in two episodes.
It's so clear that they are starting a redemption arc and to go away from Cersei. Like, it is so clear, at least right now, that this is...
He's picked his side. And to fall back on that is such...
Mm-hmm. One line from Tyrion. You've always known who she is, but you loved her anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
No, I mean, like... Don't get me wrong.
It's weird that he does default back.
It makes sense that why he goes that way. What I really don't like is all the stuff that happens between now and his decision to go back. I wish he wouldn't have slept with Brienne for one night.
Okay. Yeah. Kind of like a Littlefinger storyline last season, but with Jaime. Kind of different dynamics in the works here, but it's kind of like they're making you think that he is definitely going down this path, and then to give you the, but it's not even worth it. Like, this one's not even like, oh, we're killing Littlefinger. It's
a great
payoff. It's like, oh, they died.
We're leaving
together.
Brienne in shambles, and Jaime and Cersei die in a pile of rubble.
Uh huh.
Yay. But anywho. Gives them the information, and even if they defeat the Army of the Dead, she'll have plenty of men to kill the survivors. And when Daenerys asks why he came, Jaime states he promised to fight for the living, and he intends to keep that promise. And Tyrion steps up, but Daenerys quickly stops him because Tyrion was wrong about his sister, too. And Tyrion argues the fact that Jaime knew of the cold reception he'd get at Winterfell, but came anyway. This surely has to mean something. And Daenerys suggests Jaime came north with the intention of warming his way into her confidence with Tyrion's help and potentially assassinating her. Which, you know, fair concern.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
He did kill the Mad King.
Yeah,
you know,
the man who killed her father, who has seemingly been loyal to Cersei in every way possible and imaginable, including in the bedroom as her twin brother.
Literally charged at her with a spear in hand on a horse.
That's also
trying to actively kill her. So,
yeah, a lot of stuff here. A lot of stuff here. A lot of
red flags. Yeah, from Daenerys' side.
Cogent concerns, for sure. Mm-hmm. But Sansa surprisingly takes Daenerys aside, agreeing that they can't trust him. You know, she's Sansa's like, we got to hold it down. Fuck this dude. He pushed my little brother out a window. That Jaime attacked their father in the streets and tried to destroy her house and family the same as he did Daenerys's. And she doesn't know that he pushed Bran out of a window.
Yeah.
So but, you know, the spirit of it. Jaime quickly retorts, if it's an apology they are seeking, they won't get it. He said they were all at war and that everything he did for his house and his family, and he would do it all again. And Bran interjects with my favorite line of the episode, the things we do for love.
Ah, man, that's... He's just waiting. Like, you know, he's...
Yep.
In my head, Bran, everything he says from now on, he will look forward in time to make sure that he says the right thing and that it goes the way he wants it to go. Right. So like in this case, all that it is just like a slam dunk on Jaime. But the thing is, no one really knows it's a slam dunk on Jaime other than Jaime. Mm-hmm. You know, like it kind of works and it kind of like because people will see Jaime react to the line as like, you know, like, oh, why did that take him back by so much? But like, you know, as an audience member, it feels so good.
Oh, it's great. It's great. I love it. No, and I like it. This is one of those things, something that I've been trying to pay attention to is Bran and the fact that he has been like, I can't, not me. Nope. It's not me. Not I. I'm not going to do anything. I'm not going to do it. And then by the end, whenever they're like, how about Bran's king? And he's like, this is what I was made for.
What's up, guys?
You know, here. Like,
I've been here.
Glimmer of personality and the idea that it is still Bran Stark, which they have not, he's been insistent. It is not him dropping, you know, things we do for love is a little indication that Bran's still in there, you know?
Okay. Yeah. No, that is true. Because I guess whenever he does take the throne, he takes it as Bran Stark, right? Yeah. So, that is. I guess I've never thought about that. You know, so he is still Bran Stark a little bit, and he's got a little bit of those the Bran pull throughs.
Well, and it's why he'd wait at the gates, waiting for Jaime to show up. You know, he's waiting for an old friend. He's got like, there's just all sorts of stuff that I feel like they're small to be sure, but it's little things that do indicate that Bran's still in there. But when Daenerys again asks Jaime why he's abandoned House Lannister now, Jaime quotes something Brienne once said to him. This goes beyond loyalty. It is about survival. And Brienne stands and steps forward on Jaime's behalf. She tells Daenerys that Jaime is indeed a man of honor. And Jaime defended her from Locke and his Bolton cronies at the cost of his hand. And she then looks to Sansa and adds that without Jaime, she wouldn't be alive. Moreover, Jaime armed and armored her and sent her to find Sansa and bring her home. Because he swore an oath to her mother.
Mm-hmm.
And Sansa eventually agrees that they should let Jaime stay without seeking approval from Daenerys first.
Daenerys. Daenerys feeling, I don't know, she's not feeling good. Yeah, she has felt like a queen in every scenario she has been in before.
Until she now, got here.
Like, she's almost a non-factor. This, like, if she didn't go with what Sansa was going, you know, with what she was saying, then the North would hate her. She's forced into her hands. Mm-hmm. She has no power, really, here right now. And she just hates that, you know. I see, you know, maybe this is the early start of her, like, just getting a little, you know, just that little spark, the start of it.
Oh,
you know?
This episode is certainly like, the beginning.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Oh, that's true. Because then her conversation with Sansa later. True.
And her conversation with Jon.
Ooh. Yeah. Oh, damn. Yeah. She's
so the only people who know are your brother and your best friend. Okay. You know, like, that whole thing is definitely the beginning, especially in this moment, whenever Sansa does defy her, doesn't defy her per se, but goes over her head, goes ahead and lets him in. And she looks at Jon. Daenerys does, like, What's up with that? You gonna do something about that? John looks at her and just like puts his head down, walks away. He's like, yep, we can't talk anymore. You're my aunt and I'm uncomfortable with that.
Yeah.
We have
sex. Like, I don't know what to tell you right now. There's no way to tell you. Yeah. I mean, how does he go about telling her? Is it from him or is it from someone else? And then they have the conversation. I don't remember how it went.
John,
down.
She just goes down to the crypt and he's looking at Liana and he's like, all right.
Oh, so it does happen this episode.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, and then, okay, that's right. Duh. It literally happens. Yeah,
for those right curious, we planned on recording this episode literally 2 weeks ago. But then I got terribly sick and then Joseph got terribly sick. And then we decided to cover some other things in the meantime to align with our schedule a little better. And now we're here.
No.
So I actually haven't watched the episode in a couple weeks. However, I have watched the episode like 6 times in the past. So I'm pretty familiar with it.
Yeah, it's very, this one episode, it felt like Bran was actually coming out of the show to be like, no, you are not supposed to cover it now. You wait. And I guess we're okay now. We're in the clear.
We're there. John says they need every man they can get. And Daenerys eventually acquiesces, Tyrion sighs, and Grey Worm walks over and gives Jaime back his sword. And Jaime thanks Daenerys, and as Sansa leaves, Daenerys turns to face Jon, but Jon awkwardly avoids her. And confused, Daenerys also leaves. And when Daenerys, Tyrion, Jorah, and Varys are walking down a corridor, Dany vents her anger about Cersei's betrayal. She says that Tyrion either knew Cersei was lying or allowed himself to be duped. Both Daenerys and Tyrion agree he was a fool in this matter, and that if he cannot help get Daenerys on the Iron Throne, she'll find another hand who can. Once Daenerys is out of earshot, Tyrion dryly opines to Jorah and Varys that one of them might be getting his position soon.
Tyrion not feeling too hot right now. You know, that's for sure. He's
not having a great time these days. And frankly, I don't think he has a good time until the finale of the show, whenever he like is forced to make a decision about who rules.
It's a
pretty rough going of it for him.
And it's not good. Yeah, it's not good. Not good at all. Yeah,
and it's particularly not good because he's utterly fucking useless.
He used to be so like impactful, or I guess I don't know. Maybe he was always making the right decision. You know, he was always the one who came out victorious in whatever strategic battle he was in. So maybe it just makes it seem that he's more important, you know, and then just when he starts to lose, it just doesn't seem like him. So it's, I don't know. It's just,
no, I mean, like, he's been important. He's been fucking up. He's been like, Daenerys is not wrong in blaming a lot of the failures of her time in Westeros on Tyrion. Tyrion has fumbled the bag multiple times.
If it takes her dragons out once, like beforehand, like she wanted to, she could have just known that, like the entire where the armies are. Like she can literally scout with a dragon, you know, like maybe known that they would have been heading into a little ambush. Surprise attack. Yeah, there. So you know, I'd say it's kind of a, you know, that mistake isn't full. I don't know. That one's kind of what. That's just war, I guess. You know, just got outsmarted.
No, yeah, that's
there,
the thing. He's been outmaneuvered.
Mm-hmm,
the thing that she's making him the hand.
I guess
that
true. That is his actual job. That is his only job.
That
right
is
now,
why
actually.
He's there. Is because he's smart.
Yeah,
and he's been doing. He's. I mean, like his plans aren't bad. He's just getting outdone. He's falling back on old tricks, and everyone's got in a new game, you know? Like, it's just it's a whole other ball game for him now, and he's having a tough time adjusting, and I don't think he ever really does until he's basically like, what if we just did an oligarchy, you know?
What if we did what we're doing in the North right now, but Sansa and Jon actually have a voice, you know, little bit. It's not just you, Daenerys. but different people at that point, I guess. But
true. It's true.
Yeah.
But we will then transfer over to the section of this breakdown titled Reunions, At the forge, the men are hard at work with the dragon glass forging weapons, and Gendry is busy working, not seeing Arya watching him at first. Mm-hmm. And she is watching him with piqued interest. Gendry asks Arya if she has something better to do, for which she replies, "Have you made my weapon yet?" And he remarks he'll get to it after he's done making a few thousand more arrowhead-style weapons. And Arya says, "Well, you need to make mine first. It would be stronger mm-hmm. than the weapon he's currently working on." And Gendry says it'll be safer down in the crypt anyway. And Arya asks if he'll be in the crypt. And he says no. And she then questions, "But you're a fighter." And Gendry says he's done his share, and he even fought a few of the dead men. He even describes the army of the dead as best as possible to Arya. He tells her that he knows she wants to fight, but they are different than rapers or murderers, that they are, simply put, death.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a different ball game. Mm. And
no worry for Arya, though.
Nope, she's chilling. She actually will just display absolute, I don't know, Giga Chad, just Giga, you know, Chad. Like, holy shit, like, to actually do this in real life, what's the modern day equivalent of doing this? Like, of three dragon glass daggers that you just dime piece, like, I mean, just absolute in a pattern too. I mean,
it would still be knife throwing. Like, there's nothing you can do.
Yeah, it's just you got to do what she did.
It's crazier to say. It's far easier to aim a gun than whatever the fuck she's doing.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah.
I've neither shot a gun nor thrown knives, but I have to guess, based off my experience throwing other objects, mm-hmm. that
the human arm just isn't as accurate as a mechanical thing. I'd say, like, that poor dude that was just, like, back there working behind the pole, that, like, just like the first one, he was like, "Holy shit, like, was that meant for me? Was I supposed to die?" And then the second one hits and he goes, "You know what? I'm just going to go back to work." I think he turns around and is like, "I'm just going to ignore what's going on. Life's moving forward." I saw death twice.
But she's
twice.
Just delivering bar after bar. She goes, "I know death." Throws a dragon glass dagger hitting a door frame in the near distance. She has, "It has many faces," before throwing another, having it land right beside the first one. And Arya adds, "I look forward to seeing this one," and throws the last dagger, landing exactly beside the other two. She walks past Gendry one last time and asks, "So my weapon?" And he says, "I'll get right on it."
No problem. And I do love how Arya's walking up. She's just watching him at first, and he, like, puts a sword, like, you know, he's just hammering away, so his arms look real big and jacked. And then, like, he puts the sword in the water to cool it off, and the steam just engulfs his body. And Arya's just like, she's like, you know, she's like, "Okay, like, I'm gonna put you to sleep later. Yeah, I think we got some plans for later on tonight. You know, I think pre horror show of whatever tomorrow will be."
She's like, "I could die. I'd like to have sex before then."
Fair enough.
Can't we all relate? You know. But Bran is in his wheelchair out in the snow, just beneath the red leaves of the heart tree, and Jaime Lannister slowly approaches. And the first thing Jaime says is that he's sorry for what he did to him. And Bran replies, "You weren't sorry then." He adds that he was protecting his family, and Jaime says that he isn't that person anymore. And Bran states that he still would be if he hadn't pushed him out of the window. I'm like, okay.
Damn. So if Bran doesn't get pushed out of that window, he just remains Bran Stark. He never becomes the three-eyed raven because he gets pushed out of the window. Like, you know, if he doesn't get pushed out of the window, could he become the three-eyed raven with legs? You know, like, is it a requirement for the three-eyed raven to become paralyzed?
I don't know, but I think it's just more speaking to the fact that everything had to happen the way it happened for it to happen the way that it happened. You know what I'm saying? It's that Tenet idea. I love referring back to Tenet.
Yes, I see.
Whatever happens, happened, or whatever happened, happens, and
mm-hmm.
that's just kind of
just
the way
it's
it
just
is.
How it has to happen because it happened to happen
that way.
Mm-hmm. Time. Yeah. Fuck.
Time, man. But, curious, Jamie simply asks, "So you're not Bran Stark?" And Bran replies, "No, not. Something else now." And Jamie is curious why Bran isn't angry at him. And Bran says, I'm not angry at anyone. And Jamie asks why Bran didn't tell anyone the truth. He replies that Jamie wouldn't have been able to help them in the war to come if they had been able to murder him first.
And when he if asks he let them.
Yeah.
He says, you wouldn't have been able to help in the fight if I let them murder you first. And that's like the verbiage there. I don't know if it is that specific, you know, if it's if it is that literal, you know, sort of thing.
I mean, it's up to him. They would Sansa would execute Jaime if he knew, if she knew he's who started the War of the Five Kings.
Oh, wow. Imagine Bran gives Arya and Tyrion a chance to escape Cersei. He gives Tyrion the chance to murder his father and escape the family. That no, I think Tyrion does that all on his own. That's not a setup by Bran. But maybe Bran, like, this little lie between Cersei and him, you know, he, like, did a little bit of his magic to make him leave and come to the north. And so he, Bran kind of starts his redemption arc, and then it's up to Jaime. He actually leaves it up to Jaime at the end to, you know, whatever he wants to do. And that's why it's just so fucking bad, is because Jaime actually decides just to go back to Cersei.
It's because, well, he even asks, you know, what happens afterwards? And Bran says, how do you know there is an afterwards?
That's, yeah. Oh, damn. It is paralleled with Daenerys and Sansa, I believe, talking. They ask the same question, and they're much more optimistic of the world. They think it will continue, but yeah, I love Bran being, you're going to die, dude, and I know this, so, or maybe he, I don't know, I'm assuming
Bran
he
doesn't know the future.
But, he has to be involved. He can only know the future if he is there, right?
No. I don't think there's any capacity in which he knows the future. I think he has visions of potentialities, but I don't think it's like because he even says, I don't know if it's, I think it's this episode when he's talking to Sam, he sees all that is and all that has been. He doesn't say that he sees all that will be.
So the he can affect the future, but he cannot see the future.
He can't see the effects his actions have. You know, and that's the other thing, too, is that Bran, as we know him at this moment, can't affect the future. Bran, as we know him 75 years down the line, can affect the future for the Bran that we know as Bran right now. So, like, it's just all that shit. I don't fucking know, man. I don't know.
Yeah. Let's just chalk it up to the writing room and think about it that way.
Ultimately, that's what it is, which is hysterical.
I did see little bit of trivia that the Cogman, he wrote 11 of the 73 episodes, but he said this one was the most difficult script he had ever written for the series. He said that it relied completely on character reunions and interactions and lacked a clear plot or battle. And although there would be unavoidably be characters bringing each other up to speed with what they had been done, he admitted that his first draft was so full of recaps that it looked like a Wikipedia page. I guess that's from the Cogman.
It's a difficult task. And I think all this does have plenty of exposition. All of it makes sense. Whereas we talked about this last season a lot where, I mean, again, with the Beyond the Wall episode, which I think might have also been written by Brian Cogman. It might have actually been D&D. I don't know. But either way, that one is a lot more filled with exposition that characters who already know what they're being told.
Yeah.
That's when it's like, we're reminding the audience that this happened, and this is what that means. This is like, there are certain conversations here that would need to happen. You know,
it's like, we might die tomorrow. Let's talk is basically kind of the whole episode after Jaime is allowed to stay. And I don't know.
I remember the episode as like the night before, which really happens after their like council meeting, you know, where they decide the plan of action. That's like 20 minutes. It's like 20 minutes of a 55 minute episode.
Wow. Dang.
Like, it takes a while to get there. And then when we are there, it feel like I thought that's what the entire episode was. So I was like, oh, okay, damn. But we then arrive at one of my favorite scenes of the episode, where Tyrion is walking about the castle grounds, inspecting everything, and Jaime approaches him. And the brothers are back together, saying a quick, here we are, to one another. And up on a staircase, one of the Stark military men spits down at them. Where Tyrion replies, and the masses rejoice. And Jaime asks Tyrion what they think of their new queen Daenerys. And after reminding Jaime that she's now his new queen as well, he remarks that the people remember what happened the last time Targaryens brought dragons north. And he also states they'll come around once they see Daenerys is different. And Jaime asks his brother, is she? Are you sure? And Tyrion says yes. And when Jaime states that Daenerys didn't seem to be sure of his brother, Tyrion agreed, saying he didn't blame her. You know, I've made a lot of mistakes since she named me her hand. And, you know, this conversation ultimately leads to Tyrion being like, so she lied. Is the pregnancy a lie too? And Jaime says no. You know, Jaime says for Tyrion to not be too hard on himself, that Cersei fooled him more than anybody. This is when he delivers the line I was talking about, like literally last week, that I was like, I can't remember if he's already said it or if he says it before the end of the show, where he says Cersei uses truth to tell lies.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I remember that. I remember you bringing that up.
We were
okay,
talking about it in relation to her pregnancy specifically.
I think, and you literally did say, you're like, I don't know if this has been said. I think you literally,
you even said
this could be maybe in the future coming up. And wow, that's just nuts. I can't remember. Yeah, I can't remember what happens in each episode. I couldn't tell you probably what happened in season 7, episode 4 right now. I don't know. I just watched it not too long. I couldn't tell you right now. But yeah, I always find that impressive. You could just, I don't know. This line is probably, I don't know, might be said in the future. I can't pull that out.
It was just stands out, you know. And I appreciate Jaime kind of comforting Tyrion here and being like, she fooled me, and Tyrion being like, no, she didn't. Fucking asshole. You always knew exactly what she was, and you loved her anyway. And Tyrion tells Jaime he never imagined he'd die at Winterfell, bringing a past joke between the two of exactly how Tyrion pictured himself dying. You know, with a belly full of wine and a whore's mouth around his cock.
Dying, though? Like, I mean, you're that old. You're probably an old man at that point, you know.
I'm pretty sure the first part of it is at a ripe old age with a belly full of wine and a whore's mouth around my cock.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I haven't reached the ripe old age yet. I just don't know how well the factory still works, you know, basically is what I'm trying to say is like, is it always enjoyable, you know? Like does it ever reach a point where it is not enjoyable anymore, you know, just because of how old you are? Or
I severely doubt it. I have a tough time imagining it ever being like, God, this sucks, you know?
That's true. I guess the full thing, if you're going for the whole home run and you got to do a lot yourself, maybe then, just because you're old and you're skeleton and all that. But if you can just...
You can lay back.
Yeah, if you... A belly full of wine at a ripe... You know what? Maybe now that I'm thinking about it. Okay, Tyrion. Tyrion, he's thought about it, you know?
He's considered the options, to be sure, but as Tyrion is talking, finding some black humor in the prospect that being killed by the undead will deny Cersei the satisfaction of having him killed, he continues as Jaime distractedly walks away and says something about, perhaps maybe I'll go down there and kill her myself if we live through this. And Jaime... luckily doesn't hear that. I'm like,
it would be interesting Jaime's response to that, what he would say to that.
I mean, it wouldn't be favorable. It certainly made for a chance for us to not watch them fight again. I'm pretty sure they have nothing.
You think they would instantly just go at it? Like, because like,
I think Jaime would bring up how he killed their dad, and he'd be like, is that not enough? Do you need to kill our sister too? You know, like,
Cersei is actively trying to kill Tyrion at every moment and is not trying to hide it whatsoever, you know, but then, so, I mean, and no, he was saying it in like a joking way. It was more of like to comfort his own death, comfort like the idea of him dying. He's like, well, if I die, I guess I can go kill my sister, you know? He's like, but like, he wouldn't even know that he's doing it, or unless it's a get out situation where you are trapped, you know, and that would suck.
Maybe I'm misremembering. I thought he said, and if we live through this, perhaps I'll march down there and kill her myself.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he said expressly, if we live through this.
I thought he said if he becomes a white, that he will just continue the march south and kill her eventually.
That makes more sense. I was just I thought maybe I was misremembering it, but.
Because if it is if we live and all kill her, then I see definitely Jaime being
that's
like,
why I
dude.
Thought it was that.
I'm pretty sure it was if I die and I am a white and an undead, then I'll go kill Cersei anyways.
Regardless, Jaime, he's distracted by Brienne teaching or watching Podrick sword practicing in the yard. He's clearly gotten much, much better. And he eventually reaches Brienne and they greet one another. And Jaime tells her that he's been told she's commanding the left flank during the battle. And she states, yeah, it's great ground. And with the rise, it should give us a good advantage. And he's like, yes, I think you're right. I think it's right. Mm-hmm. Good call.
Indeed.
And, she goes, what good. The fuck are you doing?
What do you mean? He's like, I seriously don't know what you're talking about.
We have never had a conversation that lasted this long without you insulting me. And he finally admits that he came to Winterfell because he's not the fighter he used to be, and that he'd be honored to under her command if she'd have him.
And I was and she gets a little nervous. He goes, I better get back now to the castle. I'm going to leave. I'm not going to give you an answer, but goodbye. We'll talk later.
Yeah,
we'll
have a really okay. Good... I don't know.
I guess I literally did say earlier that I would fight with you, you know, literally and to your sister or not to your sister, to Sansa, in front of your brother, I guess. Yeah. Basically like I do like confessing, like it felt like a marriage proposal almost, of Sansa being like, would you fight alongside, Jaime Lannister? And she's like, I do. Or yeah, do you vouch for him? I do. And you know, Jaime has a little smile there. So it did feel definitely, you know, like a little, the start to just their little love story kicking off again. But always a little soiled, by knowing where it goes. But I guess for now I'll enjoy it. While Brienne is still somewhat happy, because Jaime, you know, Jaime is kind of like one of the sexiest dudes there is in the Seven Kingdoms. So like for her to like, just, I don't know. That's fucking sick. You know, for her rise.
For sure.
Yeah. Her rise. She's on a tear, man.
And I wanted to clarify. I looked into it. You were absolutely right. He says, maybe after I'm dead.
Okay. I'm glad it's that way, because if not, I would actually be kind of mad at that characterization of Tyrion. I don't think that makes sense in his character to still want to kill her.
I didn't either. So, but I'm glad. Okay. I'm glad it's that way. But
okay.
The effects of having watched the episode 2 weeks ago and not last night. But Brienne is she bagged a good one here, and frankly, the show's wardrobe department and makeup department don't do Gwendolyn Christie justice. That is a fucking Amazonian magnificent goddess of a woman. So Jaime, I would say, has also bagged a baddie himself.
That's some D1 baby DNA as well. You know, I don't know. That's just all around package. She's getting my character. That's for sure. We haven't even hit why. No. I wanted to throw it out. Just even like now, she felt kind of like a spotlight, like a character that they were spotlighting a lot.
The episode's named after her.
Yeah, I guess that Kingdoms. That is true. It is her episode then. So I guess that makes sense. But But yeah, we haven't even hit the real reason why, but she's definitely getting the character from me.
And she is she's more than deserving, if I do say so myself. It looks like this breakdown skips over one of my favorite parts of the episode, and I want to touch on it. Yeah, I don't believe it does. I'm going to bring it up now, and if it does, I'll skip over it later.
Okay.
But it's the part when Davos is serving lunch to the people who would be soldiers, and the little girl approaches and is like, "I want to fight."
Yeah.
And he's like, "Oh, you can," and Gilly walks over and we get a great moment with Gilly being like, "Well, we'll need you down in the crypt, you know, like, I need somebody to protect me." And she's like, "Fine, I'll protect the crypt." I love the way she's like, she delivers one of my favorite lines of the episode, the little girl, "But both me brothers were soldiers." I love when she says it.
It was so cute. Yeah. Like, and
"But both me brothers were soldiers."
Yeah. "Fine, I'll protect the crypt." You know, it was like, it was so just so cute. And like,
it was adorable.
Ah, man, I don't know. Yeah, that was it. And that, I think that's what this episode kind of is, just at large. It is just a nice, rare to have nice feeling moments in Thrones, but they're just giving you as many as they possibly can.
Next episode
before
feel like shit for most of the runtime, bro. You gotta get it in. Most of the rest of the season is gonna feel like shit, so you better relish this while you can, bro.
I think every season of Thrones has a quota of how many deaths they need to meet anyways, and they still met it every season. It's just this episode has zero, so they really had to ramp up production and just keep batting people off. Yeah, I mean, I'd say the death section of next episode will be quite large. Well, I guess of big named people, maybe not necessarily, but just number, you know. It's a lot of Dothraki, a lot of, you know, army.
We will be saying goodbye to Jorah, Theon, Dolores Ed,
The Night King.
The Night King.
And the entire army of the dead. Goodbye for good now. No resurrections there.
No resurrections this time.
Is that it? Maybe that is it. I guess maybe a small list as well. On the grand scheme.
A bunch of Dothraki, a bunch of Northerners, a bunch of
10,000 Dothraki. Or I don't know how many.
Oh, they got. I thought you were reading that. I was like, what the fuck?
No. No, I don't. Is there not a death section on this? What?
Is it just lower?
Maybe I just haven't. Oh, wow, that just, the breakdown is actually just very long. I thought it was over, but no, it is, I guess that makes sense. It is one of the craziest episodes there is. Wait, yeah. Oh, no, that's like the book breakdown. Yeah, there is no deaths section on this one either. Maybe for season 8, they just don't have deaths.
They disregarded it.
Interesting. Oh, but if you go, never mind. I was on the current episode. I'm stupid. Edison Tolet?
That's who Dolores Ed.
Oh, Dolores Ed. Dang, I didn't know that was his actual name. Yep, Edison, there he is. Lady Lyanna Mormont. Mormont. That stinks.
She goes
Lord
out.
Beric.
Dope as fuck, though.
Okay.
Beric does die. Yep, Beric, Melisandre.
Kono? Oh, he's the leader of like the Dothraki right now. Lady Alice Karstark. The little young Karstark, off screen, I guess. Fergus. I don't know who Fergus is. Happens off screen as well. A commoner at Winterfell, it looks like. Theon. The Night King. Dark member whose first name is unknown was an ancient member of House Stark. Stark just died. That still doesn't.
Oh, probably
even really
one
make
of
sense.
The one of the dudes who wakes up in the crypt.
It is. Yep. Actually, you're right. He's a white also, raised by the Night King in the crypt.
Do we want to? Why the fuck? Mm-hmm. Why the absolute fuck would John think it's a good idea to put people in the crypt?
He does resurrect dead people, but that's honestly not like, I don't think that's real. It should be in the front brain. It should. But I think the front brain is just, we are about to be 100,000 plus. We don't even know how big of an army is about to be at our front door. Go into the basement, you know?
No, for like, sure. And frankly, I don't know that there is a better place for them to be.
Even with the dead bodies, I think.
Even with the already dead bodies down there, it probably is still the best place to be. Mm-hmm. However, I think we could do a little bit more to prepare the people that are going down into the crypt to be around dead people who could be resurrected at any time. Mm-hmm.
To set like a trap, just a booby trap in front of each person, or you know? I don't know. Like a.
Or even just send guard. The women and children south. Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Yeah,
I understand why they don't, you know, because then it's like, how are you going to be informed on whether or not Winterfell survived or if it fell or et cetera? It's like, mm-hmm. again, like I get ultimately, I do think this is the right place for them to be. But mm-hmm. I do think it's hysterical that it never occurs to John. There's another one of these massive fucking oversights here in two episodes where it's like, how do you just like forget that?
Yeah, I guess it would make a lot more sense if they were like, okay, and by the way, these are dead people. Have one person with a dragon glass dagger at each, you know, just ready to go.
I'm pretty sure they do have dragon glass daggers down there, if I recall correctly.
We got that little girl down there defending the crypt. You know, she's down there.
The crypt.
Yeah,
hopefully
she's down there, man.
Next episode, that would suck if she doesn't.
I didn't see it. That was all the deaths. That was it. So that was the end.
She did it.
Yeah, she made it through for sure.
Yeah, no, the scene where they wake up in the crypt is, it's a rough one. It's a rough one. The sound design next episode is one of those things that sticks with you a little bit.
Yeah.
In terms of like, I don't know, blood curdling screams of innocent people. It's a rough one. It's a rough one. But, yeah, anywho, I just thought I had to bring it up because it was always, I remember even as season 8 was going on and they were like, we'll put them in the crypt,
and you were that never occurred to me, it was a point.
Well, I remember it being like a point of conversation online and people being like, so is there just no chance the people in the crypt come back to life? Is there a time limit on how long they have to be dead before they can be resurrected? They're like, this seems like a pretty big oversight. And then it ends up just being a pretty big oversight.
I mean, honestly, a lot of it is they're going off of just like, fuck it. I guess this is how it works. Like, John's like,
true.
They're like, how do we kill them all? And he's like, well, he made them all. So I guess if we kill him, they all die. You know, and they're like, okay, sure.
You know,
sure. Yeah, that's the plan. But like,
I wonder if John was like, there's got to be a statute of limitations on the length of time like, before they can be resurrected, you know?
Like, this Stark guy's been dead for 300 years. Like, no way there's enough there for the Night King to work with.
It's just a skeleton now. Like, right? let's not kid ourselves, you know?
I'd say there would be eventually a limit. Well, there's magic, so it just doesn't fucking matter. No, I mean,
we watch full-blown skeletons, basically.
I was trying to think of like, okay, the skeleton's still there, but your brain, you know, maybe he needs the brain. If there's just an atom of a brain left, that's it. It just needs a mindless, you know, just that's all. But once your brain's decayed and gone, then you can't be there's nothing to resurrect. But it's magic and he's the Night King, so yeah, I don't think that matters. I think it's just if you're dead, he can resurrect you.
Yeah. If you're dead, like if you are no longer living, he can do whatever he wants. Anywho, We're on to the princess and the queen, where elsewhere back in the castle, Jorah enters to speak to Daenerys on Tyrion's behalf. He tells her she would give him a second chance, and they both remark on why Jorah isn't Daenerys' queen, or hand of the queen. Be hilarious if Jorah was Daenerys' queen. But she remarked, I would love to see that. Jorah just in drag, like, let's get it, you know?
I'd say Jorah would be down.
Well, I think Jorah would be down. I want to see Jorah in some fishnets, and I want to see him just getting down for Dany.
Screw Daenerys, screw Aegon or Jon Snow. No, we need Jorah on the throne in queen drag. I mean, that's like the drag queen. I mean, like that's like kind of badass. Wow, it's
the drag queen of the dragon queen.
Ooh, okay, now we're talking. Yes. Would Jorah be the best candidate, though, you think? You know, now that we're on, I think.
Okay, let's go with this for a second. In Westeros, you want
to imagine Tormund. Like, imagine
Tormund would be a good drag queen.
Like, that's who I'm thinking.
I think he would be a great drag queen. There are a few, there's a few seemingly more obvious options. I think Oberyn Martell would have been a great drag queen.
He'd fuck it up. He'd
fuck it up. Mm-hmm. He's got the agility on him. You know he's doing crazy shit on that stage, bro. But I tend to think of just like the bigger, burlier dudes when I'm thinking of who I want to be drag queens.
The Hound.
See, the Hound.
He wouldn't be down with it. There's no way.
That's what's interesting about thinking and Jorah. I think Jorah would take some convincing, but I think Jorah Tormund, it's no question. He's like, wait, I can do that, and they'd be like, yeah, and he'd be like, okay, you know, like I think that's kind of the vibe that Tormund's got on him.
oh man, yeah, you just gotta throw Brienne in there for Tormund, and he'll do anything. He'll do anything for Brienne if that's in the.
Podrick.
Oh, dude. Yep. No, okay. This is good. This is a different, the dragons, or what was it?
The drag queens. The drag queen
for the dragon queen. Damn. Yeah, that's pretty good.
The drag queens for the dragon queen. The show consists of Jorah Mormont, Tormund Giantsbane, and Podrick Payne. There are three. There are two Wong Fu, thanks for everything, Julie Newmar. You know, like that's there are Patrick Swayze, Wesley Snipes, and John Leguizamo.
Rickon, give him something. You know, this is Rickon's time to shine. I don't know if he's met the age requirement yet for this. No. Maybe we'll wait a little bit, actually, now that I think about it. But hey, give him something, you know, when he comes of age.
Maybe Dickon. Maybe Dickon would have been down.
Rickon and Dickon. They could have been a little pair. They could have been like a little traveling duo there. Yeah. Rickon and Dickon. Come see, you know, gather all to see Rickon and would it be Dickon and Rickon or Rickon and Dickon?
I mean, if Rickon met the age requirement, you could do a whole lot of fun stuff there. You know, Dickon, Rickon.
Okay. Damn. Oh. There's a whole, I mean, I guarantee there's no way that porn exists. I mean, there's Game of Thrones porn, I guarantee it. But like this sect.
What's that rule?
Rule 34. Yeah.
34.
Just rule 34. Never mind. I was about to say Rickon. Rickon Dickon, but no, just we need to expand the Game of Thrones horizons, you know, a little bit. We need
let's move
not
on
be so medieval.
Yeah, let's move on from the Cersei and Jaime of it all, the Daenerys and Jon of it all. Let's get a little freaky in here. Let's
just
put
animated,
on the drag
maybe.
Queens,
you know,
the dragon queens. You know,
just a crazy fucked up animated show that just throws all of these characters in any situation you'd want. You know, so like if an actor's not cool with it, or if they're not, you know, if they're a little puss, then like we can just still
they're a little puss.
We can just go forward.
Funny. Yeah. We're gonna do a fanimation of it, you know.
Dragged it can't go anywhere in there. I'm trying to think of a name for the show, or like the venue or anything of the sort. I don't think it. Game of Thongs, Game of...
Bad.
You know, it's the best I could come up with right now. I think I'd have to...
Ice and Fire.
Okay, now we're cooking. A Song of Ice and Fire. Here we go. I didn't think to work with that one. That could definitely... Okay. Yeah, this could go places. Maybe we shouldn't talk. Maybe we should keep this private. Maybe this is too good to let out.
Copyright.
Let's get some
protect
legal...
our intellectual property here.
It's not ours to begin with whatsoever. It is Warner Brothers. No shot. But anyway.
Anywho, I do want to go ahead. All that to say. My favorite character of the episode, since I won't get a chance to do it again, unless maybe I end up doing it next episode, is Jorah Mormont. Mm. I like Jorah a lot. I like Jorah a lot in this episode. I think that him writing for Tyrion here is a great look for him.
Three for him. I like
that's
that.
Three for him now?
Yeah, he did have two. It is three. He just jumped over Hodor and Daario Naharis. And Brienne of Tarth. Well, never mind. Brienne will get another one from me. So she is tied with...
Beautiful.
Jorah there. So we'll move those two down. And they're tied with Samwell Tarly and Barristan Selmy.
It's a good crew. A good crew.
Like that. Like that a lot.
But, Jorah insists to Daenerys that... she made the right choice in naming Tyrion her hand. Yes, he has made mistakes, but he learns from them. He takes them to heart, and he has Daenerys' best interests at heart. And Jorah advises that Daenerys forgive Tyrion and offers another suggestion of advice. He's the reason Daenerys and Sansa go and have this little sit-down, which is sweet. In Winterfell's library, Daenerys finds Sansa conversing with Lord Jon Royce, who is advocating for sealing the gates as soon as they have their troops deployed outside the walls. While Sansa is in favor of keeping them open as long as possible to let as many refugees reach Winterfell as possible, Daenerys requests a private audience with Sansa once Royce is gone. And I appreciate that Royce is like, I will not be dismissing based off of your request. I will look at my queen and I will check out what's going on there. He looks at Sansa, and Sansa nods, and he's like, all right. Nods at Daenerys on his way out, like, doesn't even, no liege or anything.
None of that. Nope. Yeah, he's...
Yeah, they don't Daenerys respect her out here, for sure.
Texas if it was snowy, you know. This is, like, we are out in the Texas lands, I feel like, you know, this... Of the what would the actual modern geographical equivalent of Winterfell be? Maybe like a little bit of
in terms of politics or in terms of just like
because Texas doesn't make sense because like warm just temperature and shit. But like it makes sense with like I guess politically. Like I guess if you mixed like Florida and Texas, like the Florida type of people. No, Northerners are actually pretty chill. They're not.
I don't know. They're flagrantly racist, so Florida and Texas might not be that bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but as far as that, yeah, that's where I was trying to go down that road. Very clear. Daenerys is not. I don't know. Did Daenerys have a reaction? Do you? I don't know if I caught. No, I didn't really catch that she or that Royce got Sansa's approval and not Daenerys.
Yeah, no, I don't think she got like she felt some type of way about that particularly. Mostly because I mean. Jon Royce, like who gives a fuck, you know? But
damn, yeah.
This dude is like, it's hilarious how self-important he is. I think that
he makes
like,
himself feel important.
Yes.
Yeah. That's what you're trying to say is that like he just like, he feels that he's much more important than he is.
What I also like kind of respect about it is that he thinks he's extremely important. Which, in fairness, he probably is the closest thing to like. A formal ruler of the Vale. Now that Peter's dead,
yeah, I guess and Robin Aaron's not.
Yeah, it's still Robin, but he's fucking Robin Aaron. You know who I would even want less than Jon Royce. But like he's willing to yield to Sansa, like he's down to ride for Sansa, which does make him a little, that does redeem him a little bit in my books, but it's so the air of just superiority he carries with him. It's like at all times.
Yeah, it's like he even is the way he holds his face, like the way he's just he's in his little beard, you know, his little fucking beard, man. The I don't know. What do you even call that? Kind of baller. I you know what? Kind of bold. No one else is rocking that beard.
He's got the cul-de-sac going on up top too, which is
the cul-de-sac. You know, wow.
It's wrapping around the head
here. Uh-huh. Yeah. That's awesome. That is I've never heard it referred to as the cul-de-sac.
Oh no shit. Yeah, no, it's
that's incredible.
It's a great hairstyle.
Wow. Yeah. I bet that's like offensive to be like told. Like you have the hairstyle like, of a cul-de-sac. Like, you know, I feel like that's like I would hate to hear that.
It's typically not a choice. You know?
Yeah, that's true.
It's typically not like, oh, I chose the cul-de-sac. You know?
You know what? Let's start a revolution. I'm bringing the what it's a, you know, what's the word? Like it's my decision, but there's a word. I feel like there's just a single word for that. Like my self decided cul-de-sac. But I feel like there's one word that would work better there. Like my choice. The chosen cul-de-sac.
The chosen cul-de-sac.
Yeah, I guess even worse with alliteration.
Skywalker of cul-de-sacs here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm gonna. My aunt cuts my hair. She's gonna be very confused when I come up, and I'm gonna be like, "Hey, can you give me a cul-de-sac? You know, like is that in your skill book? You know, is that known? Is that I don't know amongst
it's hysterical that it would
hairstylers.
I could probably give you a cul-de-sac. You know,
that's true. It doesn't take much skill to give a cul-de-sac. I guess that's
you know,
fair.
But I would say it does have to be a certain like if you want it to look. Like there's a certain element to it where it almost has to be wisping. You know, it can't be like a hard fucking line.
If it was it's too clearly the chosen cul-de-sac. You have to have a middle ground. You have to find that middle ground.
There needs to be some thinning going on, you know, or else, ironically enough, the not chosen cul-de-sac looks better than the chosen cul-de-sac, you know?
Damn. We're going a lot of places this episode. It's crazy from Jorah Mormont to get us down the drag show train, and then Jon Royce, two characters that I would have never expected to get us on tangents, going just absolutely.
No, those are two paragraphs in a row on the breakdown here. Lord Royce also a imperial bureaucrat for the security firm in Andor. He's the one who Narc goes and talks to at the beginning of episode one, who's like, I'm going to a conference down this way and I'm going to be here for a while. So
that's Royce.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God. I bet you probably said that during the, whenever we were covering it as well.
I did during Andor. Yes. It's relevant again, you know,
It's clicking again.
It is. It's cool. Wow. It's always fun. I love the Star Wars Game of Thrones connections, and there are a plenty. But once Royce is gone, Daenerys remarks on how she thought they were on the verge of agreeing in regards to Jaime and asks Sansa why she changed her mind. And Sansa replies that she trusts Brienne's judgment completely. And Daenerys responds that she wishes she could have faith like that in her own advisors. And Sansa tells Daenerys that Tyrion is a good man. He was nothing but decent to her while she was a captive in King's Landing. And Daenerys replies that she chose Tyrion for her hand not because he was good, not just because he was good, but also because he was intelligent and ruthless when necessary. And Daenerys says, he never should have trusted Cersei, to which Sansa replies, you never should have either.
Mm-hmm.
And wanting to clear the air and find common ground between them, Daenerys acknowledges she and Sansa have similar experiences. They have complicated families. They're both women who've been trusted with ruling in a world where few women can do that. And they've done it well, to which Sansa does agree. However, Daenerys notes that despite this, she can't help but feel like they're still at odds with one another. And it's just the way she says that line that feels so fucking demeaning. I don't know what it was, but it was...
I can't feel but notice. you know, maybe we're not on the best of terms, you know? Like, yeah. it's so passive-aggressive.
And like Sansa being like, I love the whole vibe Sansa's bringing to this thing, where Daenerys is being delicate, and I will grant her that. She's trying to give an olive branch. She's trying to make good. She knows Jon wants that. She knows she wants that. Like, it's tactically a good idea to be in good with Sansa Stark, you know, like, regardless. Mm-hmm. And so she's doing this whole, and Sansa's just being like, yeah, no, for sure.
I think it's also just like, throw all the queen and every title, everything out. It's just Daenerys also likes Jon and is kind of like, I really need his sister to like me in order for like Jon to like me more. So like, I have to make a good impression on Sansa. You know, it's kind of just
she noticed earlier in the episode how Jon sided with Sansa and is like, and then he ignored me immediately after. So maybe there's something there as well, you know. But, you know, she says, your brother. And Sansa admits she is wary of Daenerys because Jon clearly loves her, remarking that men do foolish things for women they love and their emotions can be manipulated to exploit them. And Daenerys replies that she's only known one goal all her life, the Iron Throne. But then she met Jon, and now she's at the North, having brought her armies north to fight the Army of the Dead. And taken aback, Sansa responds that she should have thanked Daenerys when she arrived, and Daenerys confides in her that she loves Sansa's brother and trusts him completely. So, tell me again. Who manipulated whom? And
it's all love, man. In a little, not really anymore. That's kind of all been sucked out dry there.
It
no
really
more.
Sucks. There's this thing that happens in episode 4 where you can tell, I think it's episode 4. It's the beginning. Episode 4 is such a bizarre episode because it starts with like the funeral and the revelry and the post win. And then we go to King's Landing and shit. Like, it's just a bunch of shit. A bunch of shit happens. But she like comes on to Jon. And is like, come on, like, let's do this thing. And he wants to real fucking bad. You know, he's like, I can't, you know, he's like, I just can't do it. You know, like,
you can't blame the guy, you know,
not one bit.
Like, that's the thing. He could have lived his whole life without knowing that. Is that better or worse? I don't know. You know, like, if he was never told, if he was never told ever, this information was never found out. Bran and Sam are just fucking dead, or they just don't find out, and they just live their life. You know, Jon is still Jon Snow his whole life. Is that better? You know?
Here's the thing.
It's like you're...
Probably.
What you know is your reality, you know?
Yeah.
It's just what you know.
Do you mean better for Jon personally or better for, like...
I mean, yes. I guess, obviously, it is better for Jon personally. Just obviously.
Yes.
It would be better for him. But
I
guess, like, I'd
argue... Well, and here's the thing. There's a possibility that if Jon doesn't learn that he's Aegon Targaryen, he does actually become the king of the Seven Kingdoms.
Anyways,
the king regent, he becomes he marries Daenerys.
Very true.
Which I would argue would not be better for Jon. I think it is better for Jon that he finds out and ends up being like, fuck this, I'm going north of the wall, you know, like, I want to be out there, you
like,
know
what, see you later. I guess that is better. I guess I was my head, I'm more of in the line of the what if, you know, if you had to put yourself in this situation.
I'd rather not know.
Right?
That's Daenerys.
Here's the twist. You don't know ever your whole life, and you are married to Daenerys. You are the king regent. You live your life. You have no idea. But when you reach the afterlife, everything is made apparent. Everything, you learn everything. And once you reach the afterlife, so your afterlife, your life is good, but then your afterlife, you forever know that, you know, you were married to your aunt and having sex your whole life with her. Or you find out early.
I think once it's been done, It's been done.
But they did it. They already did it.
That's what I'm saying. So, like, I think,
so you're saying there's no harm in keeping it going, or
no,
like,
if he doesn't know okay. as it's happening.
But the afterlife, though, like, that's a big, that I feel like that's a big thing.
But the afterlife's eternal.
That's forever. You know? And you got to, like, live with that forever.
He's got to live with it forever now.
Oh, I see. But he could live forever knowing that once he knew, he cut it off, you know.
And
like, once he knew.
That's fair, but can he take solace in the idea that he never knew?
Fair, because then why would he
he can't change
anything?
It now.
Okay, damn, you're right. You would just stick with, because obviously, holy shit.
Daenerys fucking Targaryen, man.
Yeah, okay. I think we've arrived at our answers. Tyrion's right. Jon's, you know, I guess just everybody's kind of right.
There's a lot going on here, for sure.
The wrong answer that seems right at first ends up not. It's what you think out the gate. It's true.
But anywho, Daenerys says he's only the second man in my life I can say that about in terms of being loving and trusting of completely. And when Sansa asks about the first, who was it? Daenerys replies, someone taller, making both Sansa and Daenerys laugh.
Damn, fuck Kit Harington, I guess. You know, they're like, bro, every opportunity.
Bro, you are 5'8". You are an average height man, you short pussy. You know,
yep. No, if we have an opportunity to make fun of it, we will, you know, it's like
hysterical. And I'm like, you know, I'm not going to be out here claiming that I'm a tall man by any means. I'm not much taller than Kit Harington by like maybe an inch. I'm like, I can't imagine looking Kit Harington in the eyes and going, you short little guy, you know, like you little, dude.
It's all relative. Kit Harington is taller than I am, so I'd be looking up to Kit Harington. So I mean, that's it's all relative, you know. To Tyrion, we're all. I mean, I'm a giant. I'm actually really tall to Tyrion, you know. So like, it's just from whoever's.
I'm gonna get Victor Wembanyama in here. No, but.
Yeah, I guess that's who Dany needs, you know. I don't know. That's the only thing that matters for John is the perfect everything, and it's just nope, not tall enough. Sorry,
he's itty bitty. He's a little guy, but however, Sansa has one sticking point that drives a wedge through her and Daenerys' new rapport. Assuming they succeed in defeating the Night King and Cersei, and Daenerys takes the Iron Throne, what happens to the North? And after taking it back from the Boltons, Sansa vowed they'd never bow to another ruler. And before Daenerys and Sansa can talk that out, Maester Wolkin interrupts. Theon has arrived. And back in Winterfell's Great Hall, Theon awaits with a detachment of Ironborn, and he informs Daenerys of Yara's plans to reclaim the Iron Islands from Euron in her name. But he's come back to fight to defend Winterfell, if Lady Stark will have him. And this is a good moment. Sansa running up to him and giving him a big old hug. This hits. Aww. It really does. It's good, man. I love it.
Another, you know, it's a good moment for Theon and Sansa, and it is all good. It hits all the boxes. But another Daenerys kind of like a, like not
if
feeling
Lady
the
Stark
best
will
about
have
it.
Me. Yeah.
Exactly. It's like, I will fight for you. I will defend Winterfell for you, you know, and Daenerys, I think, I do remember her having a reaction to this one, kind of, you know, happy for them, but also, you know, at the same time, just kind of like, you know, that's
at
great.
At least
Theon.
She got the news that Yara's going to go reclaim the Iron Islands in her name.
That's fair. Hey, amongst everything that's going on,
that's like a big win.
Pretty
that's
good.
A big win.
That's a whole kingdom, right? Aren't the Iron Islands one of the seven kingdoms?
One of the seven. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's pretty damn good, I'd say.
I would too, but. Elsewhere, Missandei finds herself on the receiving end of a lot of racial prejudice from the hostile Northerners, including kids, man. That's the rough one. I was a little like,
I think it's just a show. Like, it's that institution, you know, they're just that brought up that way.
Even more interesting is that it'd be one thing if they just never seen black people.
Mm-hmm.
Then it'd be a little bit less of it. this is an outright, they've been taught.
Yeah.
That these mm-hmm. are bad people. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's a rough look. It's a rough look for the North. Mostly because
this is true.
Ever black people here feel the need to teach that to your kids anyway. You know, like,
yeah, that is something I've never thought of. Is Missandei the first?
Yeah, Missandei and Grey Worm, the Dothraki, like, they're the first people of color that the Northerners have seen, and who knows how long.
Wow. Yeah, that's, never thought about it that way. But yeah, it is a weird, and like, just to show it too, to specifically show a scene of the kids being, you know, like, to make this shown is
like
very.
The kids, man, not even one of the kids kind of looking back and being like even just a little fucking indication that she doesn't love the way that things are or something. You know, it's not like I'm not looking for social justice warrior over here, but we're also dealing with, you know, a fantasy television show. And I get the grown up Northerners being stuck in their ways and being stubborn, but it does feel like the kids could be the beginning of an evolution to something new, as that kind of seems like the theme ushering out of this season.
I guess for this particular scene, it's just to show that they don't have a place here, you know, conversation that they go into.
It works to go for somewhere. I just more like, just as the mechanics of the North, I'm like, what the fuck are we doing? Why this? Because here's the thing. I think they, even without this, they already don't feel at home here. They're not from Westeros.
The fact that it's cold, that's alone. That's enough. Like that could be it. They're like, oh my god, it's so cold here. It doesn't feel like home at all. We don't need racism to be thrown in the bag there. You know, it's not necessary.
And it's more just that it's coming from kids, because like, I do believe the Northern adults would be racist. I do believe that, because they're even, I mean, like, they don't even like Southerners, white people Southerners. So, it doesn't surprise me at all that they don't like anybody else who's not Northerner, and they especially don't like people from Essos. Like, that doesn't surprise me. I want to qualify this by saying I don't think that that's, okay, but I do understand that that is what the characters are like.
We are in fantasy world here. We are in Game of Thrones.
Adults being like, you know, like maybe an adult takes the children away instead of the kids voluntarily being like, you know, like, that's the part where I'm like, come on now. Like the kids, bro. Like the kids.
They probably just didn't think of how it was portrayed. They were just thinking, oh, it serves really well to prove.
Yeah,
for
like
their conversation I'll have here, but
yeah,
but the grander scope of what it implies is a little different. Yeah, that would have been perfect.
If the two girls like kind of even can talk to Missandei, and then one of their grown walks over and is like, no, like carry, like takes them, and then that's and like that doesn't even actually change anything about the scene. It just makes it seem a little bit more, I don't know, realistic too, like
those kids were ready for that too, you know. They were like, they were, I mean, I guess they are child actors, and they're just told to look angrily and then walk away, you know. It's kind of, I guess, just what they're being directed to be, to
quaking in their boots over black people. You're five.
I guess
Grey Worm stomp on you.
I mean, yes. Yeah,
I know he won't,
like, an absolute, like, I love the question of how many 12-year-olds could you take on at one time. Grey Worm, I mean, the number might be infinite. I don't think
any number of 12-year-olds could take down Grey Worm.
Yeah, no, especially if they acted like this to Missandei as well. It's like extra rage towards them. Fucking these 12. Yeah, it's just a bad scenario to think of. Just one man mass murdering 12-year-olds, but no, he'd be be very good at
second Anakin Skywalker reference of the episode.
Wow, we are really making full circles here. We're going everywhere,
but
here,
no, but it does serve their conversation well, you know. Grey Worm approaches to ask if she would stay once Daenerys has the Iron Throne. And he says he'll fight for his queen until the war is done, but after. Do you want to grow old in this place? Is there nothing else you want to do? Nothing else you want to see? And when Missandei admits she'd like to see the beaches of Noth again, Grey Worm promises he'll take her back there. And his fellow Unsullied will come to protect the natives from the pirates and slavers who've long been peaceful Nothi. The last two lines of this interaction never made sense to me. They've always been hysterical. Whenever like he's him... like, the little exchange at the end here, whenever he's like, then I will come back with you. And she's like, my people were peaceful. And he's like, we will protect you. Like, okay. I'm like, all right.
Yeah, well, it was very weird. It was the classic kind of trope of like, hey, once this is all done, or like, hey, let's just get out of here, you know, like kind of thing with Rhaenyra doing at one point, you know, like it's been Daenerys, you know, at one point with, I feel like, was it Dario that said, no, I don't know. But, you know, it comes up every now and then, and it was feeling good. And I'm like, it's like, what a nice, and then like, the it was like, lines, I'm like, why like, was,
they're very, like, very just like slant, they're setting up the line where Grey Worm's like, then we will protect you. But if she had said something like, my people face these sorts of problems. So what about that? And then he's like, well, we will protect you. Like, then, yeah. But she's like, my people were peaceful. And he's like, then we'll protect you. And he's like, okay.
Thanks.
I don't know.
Thank you, Grey Worm. Yeah.
They do a great job delivering the lines. But, like, the lines themselves, this was the first time I've ever been like, what's up, Cogman? What are you cooking here?
Cogman, maybe he likes his battles. Maybe he likes a plot, I guess. You know, he likes to work with a plot, not just little satisfying nuggets of character reunions and stuff like that. I don't know.
But, yeah, I mean, like, that's just a sad interaction when we know what's to come. So, it's a real brutal one, but
he gets there. They get to Noth, right? They see he protects her from the peaceful people there. And
that's the thing, is the line reads like he's gonna protect them from the peaceful people, and it's like, what the fuck do you mean like by that?
I know. That's why it is just, it's so awkward. It is just so weird. And but yeah, weird. I don't know. It is very clear that this episode is just kind of snapshots, just little nuggets of different characters that we can get. And it was going well. They were going well, but it did just end a little strange. It was like,
That was definitely scene was the only one so far that I've had any like, just a couple choices that I'm like, I don't know. Like, I don't know why we had to do it like that. But regardless, the sound of the horn blowing brings John out to the courtyard, where to his delight, he finds Ed, Beric, and the rest of the Night's Watch dismounting from their horses. And as he moves to greet them, he is unexpectedly tackled by Tormund, ecstatic to see, and again, a contender for my favorite line is whenever Tormund holds him out and goes, my little crow. He calls him his little crow. It's so fucking cute. I absolutely love it. He's my little crow.
Tormund's definitely game. Tormund's just like one of the coolest characters there is, man. I don't know. Like,
we talked about it a few episodes back. Whenever he says to Gendry, we'll make do about like who they're gonna have
make
to
do with what
have.
With. That's right.
My little crow. I like to think that beyond the wall, Jon Snow and Tormund explore each other's bodies.
I mean, hey, got to stay warm somehow. They did say it. And whenever they got to find their own way out there. I guess the Night King's... Since the Night King's dead, is it still just cold up there? Or will it... I know it started to get green, right? It started to like melt eventually?
Yeah.
Right? Like, is that kind of like the final shot?
Turned to a little bit of a normalcy here.
So I guess they won't have to keep warm for too long. It will mellow out, but yeah, that's definitely what's going on north of the wall there. That's just keep them
they're holding
very
hands.
Close. Yeah, that looks really cute. Yeah, they're look at them. And I got other John, I guess, right here.
Oh, looking you got John on the throne.
He's very confused as to what's going on.
What's going on there? He my little crow. And unfortunately, the new arrivals bring bad news. Last Hearth has fallen. The Umbers are now part of the Army of the Dead, as is anyone who has not reached Winterfell. The undead will be here before daybreak.
Uh-oh.
Like, God damn. All right. But then night gathers. The defenders gather to make their plan for the battle to come. John notes that even with the weapons of Dragonglass and Valyrian steel and the defenses they have laid, the Army of the Dead outnumbers the living too heavily for them to have a chance at winning in a conventional battle. When Jaime asks what they can do, John suggests they make the Night King their primary target, given that he raised every monster in the Army of the Dead. If they can kill him, his army should die with him.
Yeah.
And I love that nobody's like, do we know that for sure? They're all just like, sure thing. All right, let's do this thing. Jaime predicts that the Night King, if this is true, and this is truly his weakness, will never risk himself on the battlefield. But Bran interjects that the Night King will come for him, as he's tried to kill Three-Eyed Raven many times before.
Yeah.
And Sam's little, but why?
Yeah. Because he wants to murder everything, and I am the memory of everything. Sam, you know why that's important, you know, of if the memory of everything were to go away. And that's, it got me, like, whenever he said this, I was kind of like, oh, damn. Like, if the internet, right, our Bran, were to be just destroyed, gone, that's where we have everything down, like, in on record. If it's not on the internet, it's in the libraries, I guess, you know, and books and stuff. So we still got stuff, but it'd be a lot harder if we didn't have the internet. So, like, it is this weird thing. You can't really apply this to, like, today, you know, I guess. But it got me to think of, like, has there been a time, like, before in human history where we reached a freaking a level that we didn't think we did before, but then just because the history got wiped and, like, everything, all the records and stuff, that we have no idea about it. We have no clue because there's just no memory.
Killing Bran is just burning down the Library of Alexandria, you know?
Like, exactly. Exactly. But on, like, a bigger scale, I love the kind of the quote of, like, you know, you die twice whenever your body, you know, dies, and then whenever a person speaks your name for the last time, yeah, or thinks about you, and that's, I don't know, it is pretty cool to think of it that way, that you're, you know, that feels like that's what it's all about, you know, you're trying to be as remembered for as long as you can, and not necessarily to live for as long as you can.
How do you feel about Sam's little monologue here? His little,
Sam's memory, monologue?
His little memory monologue, where he's like a, that's what living is, isn't it? Remembering?
Oh, yeah. A little forced, it felt.
Yeah, I'm like,
you know,
again, a little slanted. I'm like, I don't know if I would define living as remembering, but sure.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Living is just being in the moment and not, you know, that is weird. But I guess it's poetic, and they're all about to die, and you know, they're all just being philosophical because, like, why the fuck not? You know, it's like,
no,
just,
I like the spirit of where he's coming from, of course, you know, but, like, to reach the conclusion
that living is, like, remembering.
Well, that's where he, like, starts, but then he's like, if I was going to kill the world, you would be where I started. I'm like, yeah, but I don't know that all the reasoning you gave before that is why.
If living is remembering
no,
is,
yeah, like,
Bran,
by
Bran.
His logic that he uses there, but I think you could reach that conclusion without the logic he used strictly.
Yeah, it's just obvious. If there's one guy that you're gonna single out and kill as the Night King, it's just his Bran. Close to Danny would be number
Danny
two,
be
I'd say and then that's it. From then on, it's just meat.
It's also just very funny for that, like, again, a room full of people to be like, well, Bran and Sam say so.
Yeah.
It's always, it's, and like, I, it's,
hmm.
it's fine. You know, it's not bad. I don't want to frame it like that. It's just very funny to me that like anytime characters are just like unanimously trusting of someone, they have no idea who this fucking guy is. You know, like Jamie Lannister is standing there listening to Samwell Tarly say stuff about how living is memory. And I got to think he's sitting there just like, fucking A, wrap it up, brother. You know, like, I feel like that's the, you know, like that's just, it's just funny to think about these sorts of scenarios. I don't think it's bad by any stretch. I just think it's a little funny. But John states that they will place Bran in the crypts for his safety, but Bran refuses, declaring that he'll wait in the Godswood to lure the Night King out. And they're like, okay. And Sansa and Arya balk at the prospect of Bran using himself as bait, but Theon declares he and his men will defend Bran as an atonement for his previous capture of Winterfell. I took this castle from you once. Let me defend you now. Which was actually a good moment. I liked that. And when Tyrion, I dug that. I love that shit. But when Tyrion questions how the Night King will know where to find him, Bran reveals the claw marks the Night King left on him during their last encounter. He says, he always knows where I am. And everyone's just like, okay, sure he does.
Maybe it would have been important information to know before that, like, he knows that you're right here and we are all also right here. Yeah, you know, like, I don't know. Would have just been nice to know that before.
The way he, like, looks at him, he's like, his mark is on me.
Yep.
He always knows where I am.
He marked me through a vision, through not even actually touching me.
And everyone's like, well, his mark's on him. He must know where he is.
Maybe that's what it is. You know, you just got to go off into the world, disappear for a little bit. Everyone thinks you're dead. You come back paralyzed and a little bit different, you know, just personality change. And then just start saying some shit and people will believe you. You know, just say that you can see all this, all the world, and fuck it. We'll get a religion out of this. You know, that's what it feels like. It feels like they're starting like a whole new religion out here.
That's true. It's funny to watch them lay this plan out. They're like, Bran, you'll be over there. Theon, you and your Ironborn will go out there. That's good. Plan set there. Tyrion's like, all right, then me and Davos, we're going to signal Jon and Danny at the right time to ignite the trench around the battle. So that's step one. And it's hilarious to know some of the stuff that doesn't go to plan, such as this. But Daenerys overrides him, declaring he will be in the crypts for his own safety. If the battle is won, she will need him. And it's a nice little, like, the camera goes to Jorah and he's like, I did that. You know, he's like, she values my opinion.
I'm really the hand of the king, of the queen here, actually.
Tyrion doesn't even know. I like to imagine him doing a nice little snicker under his voice and with those fishnet stockings that are underneath his pants.
100%. That's what he does in his own time, you know, off camera. We don't see
his hobby.
That's just what he does in his
free time. But when we saw him at the brothel, when he was like, when he ran into Tyrion for the first time, he'd actually just got done performing.
You're right. He just got done with a shift. He was just taking a little break. Okay. Now, wow. And that's a whole new rewatch is with the lens.
You gotta rewatch
of
the whole
this.
Show again with this in mind. Tyrion, not super big fan of this idea, but he accepts it ultimately. And Davos suggests the dragons will be helpful on the battlefield, but Jon notes they need the dragons near the Godswood to protect Bran. When Bran is luring the Night King in for an ambush, they'll hold the dragons back to keep the Night King from suspecting a trap. Then when their enemy makes his move for Bran, they'll strike. And Arya asks the question, you know, does dragon fire stop the Night King? To which Bran can only reply he has no idea, as no one has ever attempted it.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah, nobody's ever done it.
Interesting little tidbit, you know, because, like, dragons are rare now. Like, they weren't really back then. And Bran saying that the Night King has tried multiple times to kill the Three-Eyed Raven either just means that the Night King has just never made it even close to south of the wall, and then the Three-Eyed Raven just stays at the wall and guards the Night King from getting down there, so he just never would have came into contact with dragons ever.
I will also grant that until about 300 years ago, dragons were also not in Westeros.
Ah, they were only in Valyria. Okay, mm-hmm. And then over in Essos, I guess that makes sense.
Which I've always had a little, like, they never went.
Like the dragons themselves never flew over there, you know? Yeah.
That's always been a little, like, I mean, obviously they don't like the cold, so it makes sense that they never went to, like, the north of Westeros, you know, but, like, I imagine they'd have found their way around the world a little bit, you know, and not been like, well, this is where the Narrow Sea ends, back to Essos, baby, you know, like,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who knows? But yeah, so that's why dragons, because I think they've said something about how it's been like 1,000 years since the last Long Night. So I think it's been like 1,000 years since the last time the Night King even tried this. I'm pretty sure they've said that at some point. I don't know when that was.
Yeah, no, I guess that is true. So it has. Is that the last time he tried it, or the last time he was successful? Like, did he, was the Long Night, did it work?
Well, and that's or what's like, also funny. Clearly it didn't.
Yeah, because everyone's alive.
Humans are alive. So
is that
I've
the plan to just wipe out and start anew?
I'm like, what are they referring to when they say there was a Long Night?
I mean, we have the Long Night. That's what episode 3 is called. And that's the Night King's. So maybe that he was defeated. Maybe, and this is a new. But no,
well, I guess that's
because
what the Children of the Forest and the First Men, they defeated the White Walkers when they joined forces.
Uh huh.
Maybe,
but
that
was
the last Long Night is.
They created the Night King first, though. It wasn't like they created
the
Night King to win.
The Children of the Forest created the Night King to defeat the First Men.
Mm-hmm.
And then when Night King started creating White Walkers, Children of the Forest and the First Men were like, shit, okay, let's fucking wrap it up.
Something. And then they built, that's probably when the wall was built.
That's when the wall was built. So the wall was probably built after the Long Night, or the last attempt at a Long Night.
Because I guess the land north of the wall wasn't snowy and
north
everything.
Of the wall.
So all of that land
was also not a wall.
Yeah. Yeah. So they just fuck. It's kind of like a Bad Batch scenario. They were like, oh, we created this beast. We can either carpet bomb the facility or just bomb the planet, you know, to fix that. But in this case, they're like, ooh, oopsies. We'll just build a massive wall. Just cut them off.
Magic wall. Go up several feet. Brand the builder, baby. But after everyone leaves the meeting, Tyrion pulls up a chair next to Bran and is like, so, what the fuck is up, man? What's going on there? You got, I can tell you got stories to tell, brother. Let's tell them. And Bran's like, oh, it's quite a long story. I don't believe you would like to hear it. He's like, if only you were trapped in a castle with nowhere to go and all the time in the world. Great little interaction.
Bran. Yeah. Obviously, he's going to want to know your story, man.
And Bran's like, yeah, I know you want to know my story. And I know that when I tell you my story, you're going to be like, this kid should be king.
Yeah. You'll bring that back up later. You know, you'll bring up this conversation we're having off screen later.
Okay.
Would have liked to know what.
I think I have an idea of where this could go, you know?
Mm-hmm. Would have liked to know what details he told Tyrion here that made him so, oh, yes, you're the king. Or maybe it's just the fact that, like, oh, no, your abilities are true. So
I think it's a little kind of makes sense. I think he survived insurmountable odds. He's done a ton of crazy shit. He's got these abilities. That's the thing.
Out
that,
of
like,
everyone left?
It makes the most sense that Bran would be king. Like, it's just narratively, it is a little bit like, okay, sure, fine, you know, but like, it makes sense in universe. I get it. But, at the large fireplace in the main hall of Winterfell, Tyrion and Jaime sit together and are drinking and talking. And at one point, Tyrion says he'd love to see their father's face when they decided to defend Winterfell and potentially die here. And that, Jaime ponders that for a moment and then laughs his ass off like, God damn, yeah, he'd fucking hate that, wouldn't he? But soon after, Podrick, Brienne, they both walk in and begin to drink as well. Brienne saying that she will not be having a glass, and Podrick is only permitted a small one, and Tyrion pours one over until it is overflowing on the ground.
This was fun, man.
And
you
Podrick
know,
be like,
oh,
this is like, the best. This room is the best room and the best part of this episode.
Dude, it was so good.
It's so good. Yeah, and it's such a, like, you got Davos, Brienne, Podrick, Tormund, Jaime. Like,
damn.
These people, they are related in some capacity. They have connections.
Mm-hmm.
Not extensive ones, you know, like,
no,
there's
it's some... all preparing for the shit that's about to come tomorrow. You know, they're all just like, we know, like, it's, they're about to have shared trauma if they make it out through. So it's it's like they already have shared trauma, like, before it's even happened. They're all just
they're facing their impending doom, you know? Like, whenever Davos walks in, he's like, I decided I better stay inside and warm until I die, and or I could wait outside cold till I die. So it was a no-brainer for me. So I'm here by the fire. And
gotta
Tormund
love
walks
it.
In. Yeah. I love when Tormund walks in and just turns and looks at Brienne. It's like, so, you know.
Hey. Hey, what's up, Brienne? Yeah. This,
you want to know how I got the name Giantsbane? I killed a giant at the age of 10.
He walks in with his own fucking...
with his horn.
What do you call... yeah, oh my god. A freaking... of goat's milk or whatever it is. Yeah. Like, oh my god.
Soured goat's milk.
Maybe it, north of the wall, it is attractive to chug goat's milk like that, and maybe he really thought that he was doing something to Brienne there.
He did. He did.
But, what do you mean? Oh, yeah, no, he did something to her, you mean?
No, no, I mean, he thought he did.
I was going to say, he did something to Brienne, and he gave her the exact opposite.
Yeah, he's turning on the charm in his head, explaining that he killed a giant and suckled at his wife's tit for 3 months. That's
badass.
Why I'm so big now. And
if we had Ygritte here, dude, man, only if we had Ygritte here to be like, you never soaked the giant's teeth, or, you know, I don't know.
You never soaked the giant's teeth. You never fucked the bear. None of us believe you ever fucked the bear.
A bear. Man.
Fuck the bear. I miss Ygritte. I miss Ygritte so bad. She would have been great.
Man.
She'd have been so good. You know, he explains that story, and then as everyone looks on, unsure of how to react, he just decides that's when he's going to guzzle down this horn of milk. And so he goes straight from telling this story. Everyone reacts, and you just...
yep, that's my cue, guys. All right, I guess time to
and
chug.
And it's dribbling down his beard and down his his armor and stuff, and you're like, God damn it.
Hey, dude knows how to have fun. You know, he's a great guy.
Tormund feels like the Jason Kelsey of Westeros, you know?
Yeah. Yes, that is kind of Jason and Travis mixed into one.
A little
almost.
Bit.
Like he's got that teddy bear side when needed, you know. I feel like but man, when he wants to get rowdy, he can just get rowdy.
He can get there.
The Giant's Bane part of him. Yeah, that's it's the Giant's milk, you know. That's what made him so strong and so big. So what do you say for like 3 months? Or for like, he was just there. He just, I mean, why would you leave? You know, I mean, like, if you are, like, no way this is actually, you know, like, I mean, who knows? Actually, like, I don't know. I'm taking the bear story and then this to, like, kind of mean that he just talks himself up a whole lot.
Yeah,
but, like, I'd love to headcanon this for the actual reason as to why Tormund's just so big. He actually is like half giant just from giant's breast milk. I think
just
that'd
giant
be
breast milk, man.
Giant he's breast milk. That sounds
giant
so weird.
Breast milk.
Yeah.
Is that like a hose? You know, you're just, you know, like, is it just kind of,
dude, it's, yeah. I mean, coming out at a much greater volume. That's for sure.
Be.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
it's a much larger breast, you know? Like, I got to imagine that's it can't be.
Lots of calcium, you know? I don't know.
Like, it would make sense.
His bones are strong.
But, yeah. Upon upstairs, the rooftop's walkway, Arya approaches the Hound and they sit down for a moment side by side. Fucking love this. I fucking love them. And
yeah, Beric, there's my line of the episode. Well, finally,
oh, yeah.
is everything was pretty dominated by Brienne here for me, or maybe someone else later. But the Hound, it was kind of a, like, I just started, like, I think I was taking a drink and it got me to kind of like spit up a little bit. Like, I don't think I was fully paying attention at the time, and like, I don't know, and it just caught me off guard. But I just laughed, like, and I thought it was funny, but. It's whenever Arya is just sitting there, just kind of staring at him, not saying anything. And he says, "You never used to shut up, and now you're sitting there like a mule." She just, like, he calls Arya a mule. Like, I don't know. It's just like the Hound. I love just his vocabulary. Just, he's always on it. And just, I don't know, everything he says, he's the only guy to get me to, like, laugh, actually, like, out loud, like, randomly. And, like, usually it's a cunt that he'll let out that, like, will get me and catch me off guard. But yeah, mule. This time, just was not expecting it.
Does he say mule? Man.
I think it is, unless my phone just auto-corrected, maybe.
I'm going mute.
Is it a mute? Just sitting there like a mute? Oh, that actually probably makes a lot more sense.
And, like, they don't speak. So that's where my money's at, but...
Okay, that makes a lot more sense with a mute. But I guess that wasn't the...
Mule would be funnier.
Man, yeah, I'd prefer it to be mule, honestly.
I would too. That's, you said it, and I'm like, that'd be so fucking funny. I wish.
Mute. Thank you. That makes
no problem.
Infinitely more sense than mule. But no, I just I love the switch up of this. Like, the Hound being the guy at the beginning to not say a single word and to be like, "Will you ever shut up?" You know, Arya, like, being the one to tell her to shut up, and now he's the one.
Yeah.
Just blabbering on with Beric and you know, whatever.
Yeah, Beric and the Hound sitting up there being like, "God damn, man. Yeah. We're still at it, aren't we?" And Arya's like, "All right, I'm going to leave." And the Hound's like, "Where the fuck are you going? And I only got a few hours left on this world. I'm not going to spend it with you two miserable shits." And she dips on out of there. I love the way the Hound and Beric look at each other, and they're like, yeah, I wouldn't expect her to. Arya goes to begin target practice with her bow and arrow, and while doing so, Gendry arrives with her new weapon he forged for her. And being curious after all this time, she asked Gendry what the Red Woman wanted from him so many years ago. And Gendry said his blood, that the leeches were used for a spell. And she's like, "Why the fuck would she want your blood?" And he's like, "Well, because I'm the bastard son of Robert Baratheon." And this is, like, she's genuine, like, oh!
Like, holy shit. Yeah. I love how Davos is like, "All right, don't mention this to anybody. You know, like, you're just whatever." Literally to John, to Arya, it's like, "Yeah, I'm the fucking bastard of Robert Baratheon. Who cares?" It's what almost got me murdered a couple seasons ago. But who cares now? I guess it doesn't really matter now, you know, like, doesn't really matter.
Well, if Daenerys knew, it could be a problem.
Do you think people would really rally behind him? Like, that he would have, like, a legitimate claim right now?
I don't, but...
Because of, like, Cersei and everything. Like, Cersei's... She's the... I don't know. I feel like there is... Stannis isn't a thing. There's no more Baratheon.
I think there's a better chance that Westerosi nobles do rally around a Baratheon as opposed to a Targaryen.
Okay.
In the face of Cersei's tyranny. You know, like, I don't know. I think that, like, but... Regardless, it doesn't end up going that way, so I don't think it's not that big of a problem. But Arya asks him how many partners he's slept with since. And he's like, "I didn't sleep with the Red Woman." And she's like, "Okay, but how many partners have you slept with?" And he's like, "I didn't keep count." And she's like, "Yes, you did." And he's like, "Okay, three." And Arya's like, "All right, well, I think we're going to die, so do this thing."
Yeah, pretty to the point here. You gotta kind of be in this situation. I think it was clear. I think you know, the weapon being made, seeing them all steamed up in the forge, everything. And then the last nail in the coffin was seeing the Hound and Beric Dondarrion, and Arya was like, okay, yeah, Gendry. Yeah. Like, she was like, there,
like this,
yeah,
bruh.
There is like, yeah. So I thought it was really nice. And it gave, you know, I don't know, finally a, just Macy Williams. You just seen the growth of that character, being the little girl she was literally in season one, and now
it's a tad jarring.
Mm-hmm. It is weird. Jarring. Yeah, it is a little weird, but like, it's nice to see that she's like fully
the character's
grown up,
growth.
You know,
yeah,
she's grown up and she's living life. You know, at least she's getting some of the good
taking
stuff.
Matters
now.
Into her own hands. You know, it's mm-hmm. you know, I've often possessed the thought that her abilities beyond sex have indicated a certain degree of growth in the character.
That this wasn't needed, you mean?
I'm fine with it. I don't mind it per se. Macy Williams got a body double for this scene as well, so it's not her that's naked on set too, which I think made her more comfortable too. It made me a tad more comfortable having watched her since she was like 7.
Yeah. Yeah, that is the weird
part. It's an awkward position to put the viewer in a little bit. Like, I don't mind, like, from a storytelling standpoint, I think it makes sense. I think it's a generally good choice to be like, this character's come such a long way. Look at her now. She's out here having sex with a dude who she knew when she was 8 and he was like 18. Sure. It's fine. Like, there's just a lot of weird shit going on. But it is.
I mean,
it's a little bit of an Anakin Padme thing where he's like, I haven't seen you in so long. Oh my God, you're grown now. You know, like,
yeah. Okay, so, but the other way. Yeah, a little bit.
So it's interesting. It's interesting to be sure. But, yeah, I mean, the main, if I recall correctly, Macy Williams was not a fan of this. She was like, no, this is not a good idea.
Wow.
That's kind of been my baseline, and I hope I'm remembering that correctly. Otherwise, I've had a completely wrong basis for this, but I feel like I remember Macy Williams being like, didn't love that choice, didn't think we needed it, but hey.
Feels like it's for the fans. It's just like, you have a Stark, you have a Baratheon, you know, it's good for both of them. They haven't had anything good, or like, Arya's, she's been successful, but she hasn't had anything nice, you know, or just like, not killing someone death. Or like it's always been death. Having a little bit of
nice
life
to see her with love. Sure. But back at the fireplace, the group of Brienne, Tormund, Davos, Pod, Jaime, and Tyrion, wonderful group here, continue to drink and regale stories, and I love that they all are talking about, like, you know, how many battles have been survived between the six people in this, or the five people, or six, I think it's six. Six people in this room. No, five. Brienne, Tormund, Davos, Pod, Jaime, Tyrion. Six. Sorry. I don't know how to fucking count.
It's a lot.
You know, the Battle of Blackwater Bay, and the Battle of the Bastards, and the Battle North, the Battle Beyond the Wall, the Battle at the Wall, the Siege of Pike, and this and Davos again makes another comment about how he's not much of a fighter, and Tormund goes, I love that that's kind of their thing.
Tormund, like, loves to downplay Davos, you know, like Davos being like, before they went north of the wall, he's like, yeah, I'd be a hindrance to you guys. And Tormund's like, yeah, no, you would. No, yeah, you're right. You
no
would
facts.
Be a hindrance to us. And that then now it's like,
suck.
Yeah. Not much of a fighter. He goes, yep, that's right. Like, I don't know why. Not, like, there's not a single Davos hater other than Tormund.
And I love that Tormund's not even really hating. He's just like, nah, true.
That's true. Like, he's like, no, that is true. Yep.
Davos always
not
makes
even,
a comment first. And then
I guess Tormund, it isn't out of like, fuck you, Davos.
Yeah,
it's just you're
Is that
right.
Like, and the funny thing is that those comments typically don't invite someone to be like, that's true, your insecurities are founded in reality. You know, like,
yeah, That's fair. Usually it is like you're looking for something to be like, oh no, but you're,
but you survived,
you know,
all this, yeah, you know? Yeah. And Tormund's like, no, you got fucking lucky, man. Yeah. You shouldn't have survived all that.
No,
shit.
You're totally right. Yeah. You're a shitty fighter. Like, yeah. Like, okay. Thanks. Thanks. Tormund.
We've been talking about Tormund enough that I almost want to switch my fucking character to him. But regardless, soon the subject turns to knighthood when they ask about Sir Jaime. And Sir Brienne, and Brienne insists, you know, I'm not a knight. And Tormund's like, why? And he's like, women aren't knights. It's just kind of how it is. Tradition. Mm-hmm. And Jaime refills his drink and mentions aloud, the tradition isn't strictly true. The king or queen does not have to make a knight. Any knight can make another knight. At first, Brienne kind of looks around and looks at Pod. I love that Pod's kind of her sounding board, and Pod's like,
mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, like Pod's
yes,
like, yeah,
Brienne,
yeah.
Like, yes, do this.
You earned that, you know? And I just love the unabashed support for this woman in this room. Oh my fucking God, does it make me so goddamn happy?
Man. Yeah, because everyone's just loving this moment. Like,
oh, it's, dude.
And this is the scene of the episode. I think clear, like,
this
without a doubt.
This made me fucking sob 2 weeks ago when I watched it. It made me fucking fall apart the mm-hmm. first time I watched it. I remember just, it gave Gwendolyn Christie the performance. It gave this scene the scene. I only didn't go with Brienne in the spirit of spreading love for a character. Like, and frankly, the line where Jaime goes, in the name of the mother, I grant you this. In the name of the father, I grant you this. In the name of arise, Brienne of Tarth, a knight of the Seven Kingdoms. And the first person who stands up and just fucking Tormund, fucking love it. Tormund's like, God damn it. Yes. You
Let's
know, like,
go,
I love it. I love it.
I did the same thing as you. I gave her character. I'm like, okay, no one is. It's Sir Brienne of Tarth. I could type that now officially and be good about it. So I'm like, okay, Sir Brienne of Tarth. Character nod, and I'm like, performance to Gwendolyn Christie, it feels the most right. I did want to throw in a curveball, a first, I think it would be a first, from Podrick Payne, Daniel Ooh. Portman. Is that Portman. Actually him singing?
Yes, it is.
At the end.
Broken
then
sing.
I kind of Bro's want to go fight. With him because of that.
Bro,
just because
Jenny
it's cool.
Old Stones. Jenny of Old Stones is a fucking bop. I actually recorded a cover. It's on SoundCloud. Jenny of Old Stones performed
no
by me.
No shit.
It's on SoundCloud. Yes, somewhere.
No
Go ahead, look
shit.
For it.
Anybody well,
out
damn,
there?
I will have to solidify Podrick as the performance then.
Oh,
I'll have to,
this song, I was just, I loved it. The credits is performed by Florence and the Machine, a version of Jenny of Old Stones, or Jenny of Old Stone, and I fucking love Florence and the Machine, so I loved this song, and I was just like, yeah, let's fucking do this thing.
Okay. And I wanted to ask you, though, do you think this scene deserves the double nod, you know, from both of us? Because I have one other option.
I mean, there are a few others that hit the spot, but this one made me fucking cry.
This is cry in the actual scene, which is why I'm saying, like, it's the undoubted scene of the episode.
Yeah.
But where I think Cogman started to get his cogs turning and, like, finally back into battle mode is whenever John, you know, when they were starting to plan the battle. It was like, it started out so good. And, you know, John, they're coming. We have dragonglass, Valyrian steel. You know, he's like starting to monologue. And but it's not showing John. It's showing like Winterfell. It's showing them making all the weapons.
It reminds me of like a Star Wars movie. Whenever the music's flaring up and all the rebels are like rushing to their ships.
To their ships, exactly.
Yes, exactly.
And like, if the scene could have been more prolonged like that, because then it just turned into them at the table talking, and there were some weak points there. There, like, it wasn't strong kind of the whole way through. So I think I'm definitely.
No, that part was dope. That's a good, I'd forgotten about that. Mm-hmm. That is a very cool part. But, yeah, man, I'm going the Brienne scene.
It's got to get the
when
double.
When Gwendolyn Christie looks at the room and her eyes fill up with tears and she smiles and just, oh my fucking God, dude. Like, what a great it moment for a fantastic character, for an actress who deserved a moment like this. You know, I'm a huge fan of Gwendolyn Christie, so I was so glad to see this. But Yeah.
Hell yeah. Hell
yeah. Outside in the courtyard, Dora is speaking to his cousin Liana, his little cousin, Lady Liana Mormont. And as everyone prepares for the imminent arrival of the Army of the Dead, Liana and her cousin Jora have an argument. And Jora strongly advises her to remain in the crypt with the other women and children as she is the future of House Mormont, but Liana stoutly refuses. She wants to fight along the rest of the men and women, and Jora allows her to make up her own mind. And Sam then approaches Jora, giving his family sword Heartsbane, knowing it'll be put to better use with Jora wielding it. And in the honor of his late father, Jor, who was more of a father to Sam than his own, Jora indeed says he will use it in his father's memory to guard the realms of men. And before leaving, damn, Sam adds, Sam looks back at Jor and goes, I hope we win.
Living is remembering.
Thanks, Sam.
Yeah, yeah.
I hope we win too.
He is kind of being a little forced. I don't know. It seems a little forced a little bit here. It does feel like not Sam, but
I hope we win.
And I mean, like, I do also, kind of appreciate it. Like, that it's a little charming, you know, like, this is the only character that line would come from. So I appreciate that it came from him, you know, kind of just, I hope we win. Good luck. Like,
what else do you say? You know, yeah,
like,
I'll see you later, because then you might not, you will not, yeah, it's just a fucked situation all in all. It's not good.
It isn't good. But at the hearth and out of wine, Tyrion asks the small group if anyone can sing. He looks at Davos and he's like, oh, you'll be wishing you were dead already. They look around, everyone's like, no, and then Pod just starts to begins.
High in the halls of the kings who are gone.
And I like that Tyrion is like, okay.
Yeah. He doesn't say, oh, I can sing. He just starts. I loved it. You know, like, Davos be like, oh, no, I can't. Not at all. No, can anyone else? You know, a little bit of a pause, and then just, he just starts.
Yeah, he just goes.
Man. Podrick is just, he's the Rhaegar. He's, you know, the new Renaissance man, you know. He can fuck. He can sing. He can fight. He can squire. He knows all the shit. He knows all the, info, because Tyrion, you know.
Man.
Dude, come on.
I'm so glad my boy makes it out. I love Pod, man.
That's the next, that's Bran's successor right there. That's, know, who knows? That's, maybe who should be actually on the throne right now.
It should be Pod. It would have been hilarious if Tyrion was like, and who has the best story of all than Sir Podrick Payne?
Payne. Yes. The guy who just absolutely floored the brothels and made gold instead of Payne.
Man at the cock of gold. That's not worthy of king, what is?
I would have almost forgot, because no Hodors have been, you know, at all. So I never go over to the Hodor or the Arya kill list at all. But definitely, we got to kill in this episode her virginity. She fucking killed it. Let's go. A confirmed kill, 100% clean. 100%. This one's a clean addition to the list.
This is. It's true. So, I love the little montage we get here of while he's singing. We see Samwell, Gilly, and little Sam lying in a bed together. And Sansa in the castle courtyard eating a bowl of soup with Theon. A nice little moment. Gendry and Arya in bed after having sex. And, you know the vibes. Pussy put his ass to sleep.
Getting some slumber before the battle. A good nap. Like, good sleep.
This is going to be good sleep tonight. Good on them. Good on them. She stares off in deep thought while he's fast asleep. But Missandei gives Grey Worm one heavy and deep kiss goodbye before he must leave with the rest of the Unsullied army. And then, in the crypts, Jon is staring at the statue of Lyanna Stark. Red Lyanna automatically went Mormont. Mm-hmm. Statue of Lyanna Stark. And Daenerys finds him there and approaches, and she wraps an arm around his waist as he holds her hand before Daenerys asks who the statue was of. And, like, it was cute. You know, you could tell that Jon obviously has a great deal of love for the woman, who's draped upon him here. You know, when she like just kind of comes up and hugs him and is like, you know, it's so sweet.
This?
It's just so fucking like, God damn it, man.
Like, oh, who's this, John? Oh, you know, how you feeling? Oh, that's just my mom. Oh, and you're just my aunt. You don't know this yet, but
this is
actually, I love it.
This is your sister-in-law.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, take a good look. Yeah, here's some family you never met.
Yeah, exactly. You need another bit of family you never met. Here's a new family you have, though, biblically, you know?
Yeah. Yep. Ooh, but, man, yeah, always awkward this one is to watch this.
But, you know,
go
he handles it well. He does, you know? He explains, this is Lyanna Stark. But Daenerys is like, I just can't believe everything I've ever heard about my brother. They said he was a wonderful man who sang and loved, and he raped her. And John turns to face Daenerys and goes, well, he didn't. Kit Harington has one of my favorite accents in the show. The way he like chops up words is very satisfying to me.
Well, he didn't. The syllables are very,
they're very pronounced. I dig it. He explains Rhaegar didn't rape Lyanna, but that he loved her. And together they were secretly wed. And they had a son. And if Robert Baratheon found out, the baby surely would have been killed. And Lyanna gave that child to Ned Stark and raised his nephew as his own child, pretending the child was a bastard. The last word spoken on Lyanna's birthing bed was the name of her son. And it's then that Jon finally tells Daenerys that he is that child.
And my real name is Aegon Targaryen.
Eesh.
And of course, Daenerys is like, oh yeah? Where'd you hear that? Where'd you hear that?
Really?
Whose
opinion?
Samwell read it in a scroll at the Citadel, and Bran saw it, however he sees things.
And she's like, okay, so the only two people who can confirm this are your brother and your best friend. Okay. Even if this was true, it would make you the last male heir of the House Targaryen. And they stare at each other for a moment before hearing, boing. Boing.
What happens here?
Boing.
So is this the morning, you know, or they said they will arrive before
daybreak,
So I guess, okay. So they would show up at night. So it does make sense then.
Yeah.
But man,
it's night all next episode.
It is a long night.
And that is notoriously what the episode is known for, is it not being bright.
You know? I was thinking of watching next episode on my phone, just I don't know, randomly. I think I'm gonna switch it up next episode and see how that goes for me.
This is the one. You know, if there's any one episode to watch on your phone which is not properly lit in any capacity and you want to not be able to see anything, it probably would be that one.
It's funny to say like that a episode looks bad whenever you just didn't give it the proper viewing in the first place. I think that's hilarious, but no, yeah, this.
I'm like, here's the thing. Now, should I have to turn off every light in my house and close the curtains and make sure that all my lights are like, make sure that there is no light in my room whatsoever? No, I probably shouldn't have to do that. But if that's what I have to do, that's what I'm gonna fucking do. And you know what?
I guarantee it. I will do it.
It looks good.
Yeah, I will put tape on my curtains to make sure that there is zero light coming in so I can get every little pixel of this next episode.
I'm excited for it. I haven't watched it on the Blu-ray yet. So I'm excited to see it with a little bit more. The darks are darker. The light is lighter. The color is more vibrant. I'm excited. I recall when that episode came out, I watched season 8, episode 3. Every single night for a week.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of was
night,
the episode,
night,
man.
I think I watched it two times Sunday night also. It ended, and then I was like, all right, guys, I'm going down to my room. I'm going to go watch that shit again. That was fucking awesome.
Yeah, I got to take that one in one more time. Holy fuck. Yeah, that's... Yeah. It was a moment, that's for sure. Like, it was, well, holy, it was shit, also, we're already here, you know?
You remember, like, how big of a pop culture weekend that was? Avengers Endgame came out that weekend also.
Damn, that was a... What a moment in time to go through. Holy shit, that's actually crazy. The end of Thrones, the end of the MCU.
Thursday night. I feel like everyone saw that Thursday night previews pretty much. And then Sunday night, Game of Thrones Season 8, Episode 3.
Locked in. Yeah. Yeah, that's...
But man, I'm a big fan of this episode. I think that it has a lot going for it. I think that there are obvious critical disparages it goes through. But that can be said for a lot of Season 8. And compared to a few other episodes of Season 8, I think, like, this isn't as bad.
Yeah, this one was nice. And I don't know, even, like, in enjoyment-wise as well, a lot better. Just because of it, that's kind of what it was for. It was, let's mash up all these characters and give you the reunions you want. And, you know, maybe sometimes it was a little awkward or some dialogue was a little weird, but...
Well, and there's also the tone... The first time you're watching this, you don't know which of these is last moments spent with each other, you know?
That's like, true. We have no idea the Night King is dying next episode whenever we watch this. Like, I swear, I'm thinking this is like the finale or the penultimate that the Night King will die. So I'm not thinking, like, at all. No way. Like, they'll retreat somehow, or I don't know what the fuck is going to happen. I'm not thinking all these people are about to die, but that is in my back pocket, you know? But yeah, it's, man, to be able to see this for the first time again would be something special. But upon rewatch, this one is very, very nice to reminisce and have that calm before the storm and just chill out, have some wine, have Tyrion pouring Podrick that full fucking glass. That's the vibe of the whole episode, you know. It's, we're getting away with a little extra tonight because we're allowed to. Yeah. But yeah.
I love it, man. So. I love it. How you feeling about it? A scale of 1 to 10. And before we get there, I'm going to go ahead and do some plugs.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to rate this episode here in a moment. But first, if you're not watching, you can now on YouTube. YouTube.com. Look up Penny Bloom Podcast. We're there for you, baby. What you looking all shocked at there?
Oh, okay. Never mind. I thought... The views number, it just, I thought that our Age of Ultron video got 2,700 views.
That's the total
for the last 28 days. Yes, okay. Anyways, sorry.
Sure. No, you're okay. That'd have been crazy. But, anywho, you can watch on YouTube, and we would appreciate it if you did. You saw the excitement that was on Joseph's face if you are watching. That's how much it would mean to us if you did, if 2,700 of you watched it. That would be super cool. I would appreciate it greatly. And we got a lot of fun stuff, you know. TikTok at Penny Bloom Podcast, Instagram. I've been a little shoddy over there, but I'm gonna get back on it. At Penny Bloom Podcast over there on Twitter at Penny Bloom Pod. We got all sorts of shit coming your way, all over social media. It's a lot of fun. But ultimately, my favorite place for you to be is patreon.com/PennyBloomPod. Where for $3 a month, you can support the podcast financially, which is huge because it costs me money and I don't make any off of it unless it's over there. Book reviews, comic book reviews, movie reviews and the like. Anytime I see a new 2024 movie or any new movie for the first time on the big screen, I like to write a review of it, put it up over there. Recently, I did a quick 500 word review of Lisa Frankenstein, which was a fun one. And that review is over there. So you can check out patreon.com/PennyBloomPod. But anywho, how are we feeling? Scale of 1 to 10, enjoyment wise here.
I mean, last episode was a 7.5. I'm definitely not there. I think I'm. Am I at a 9? I think I am.
I think if an episode maybe makes flat. Me cry, yeah, like yeah. If an episode makes
Brian
me cry,
scene was strong. Yeah, that makes me
feel like it's a 9. You know, and frankly, while that's like my favorite scene, it was still a strong episode. Like, there were multiple scenes besides that I wanted to pick. I just couldn't. because of that scene, you know, like yeah. Tyrion and Jaime's walk through the courtyard. Love that scene. I think that's a wonderful little reunion for them. I loved, it's not a long one, but the rooftop little interaction between Arya, Beric, and the mm-hmm. Hound. I think that's a great one. Like there's just a few, I mean, even the John and Danny interaction at the end is strong, you know, like it's just there's just a lot of fun.
They're all just kind of short and sweet. It's mm-hmm. not like a big, like, oh, this is, we got time to sit with this scene really for a long time. So it's like the clear winner. No, it's like, it's just kind of very, a lot, a whole lot of good spread out throughout the episode. So I think, I don't
bouncing
know.
Around,
I guess,
bouncing around, like, bouncing.
A 9 is episode 6 of last season, which was Beyond the Wall. That's what we gave.
I think I like it as much as
a 9.
Because here's the thing, is that episode gives a little more excitement, obviously. But it didn't provide me with as much emotion as this one did.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
just joy, you know? Like, there are not a lot of Game of Thrones episodes that straight up make you happy. You yeah. know? And I think that's worth
no deaths. It. There's no deaths. It's actually peaceful.
Can you, there's... off the top of your head, name an episode that straight up makes you happy? Or like I feel like the last time that happened would have been like when John was with Ygritte.
Yeah. Yeah, whenever they're just... Yeah,
that's like
probably
five
it.
Seasons ago.
Yeah, Missandei and Grey Worm, a little bit, you know, there's some moments there that feels good.
And like, even when I say John and Ygritte, I'm like, I still don't even recall what else happened in those episodes. So I can't say front to back the episodes made me joyful, you mm-hmm. know, like
this is an episode full
happy.
Of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, very special. I don't know. Maybe even a little boost for that. I'm fine with a 9, but a 9.25 I might be comfortable with. So yeah, I think I can dig that. Okay. Is a 9.5, is that too high? Or do we want to go even higher?
I think 9.5 is a tad too high. I think 9.25 would be my ceiling. 9 would be my floor.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure before we stopped there, but all right. Now critically here, last episode was a 6. I do think this one was done a little better. I still have this feeling that the show is self-aware of how big it is at this point, and they know, everyone knows that's working on it, and it's lost, I don't know, the show has lost something, and I don't know exactly how to pinpoint it, but it feels...
You hit the nail on the head, I think it was last week, when you said the show is a bit too self-aware.
Yeah,
I actually recently listened to our season 7 episode 6 episode, our episode on Beyond the Wall,
mm-hmm.
because fourth wall break here. That's the most recent one that released here, by the way, as far as when we're recording.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. But we had a tough time pinpointing what it was that felt off, and you said it like a couple weeks later, self-awareness. Like it is so aware of, characters are aware they're in Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
You know,
like,
and
the Tormund interrupting John hugging thing. Like, I don't know. It's not really that, like, that's not really the moment, but it feels like that's the start. The going down that path is like, that wouldn't have happened in, I don't know, in like previous seasons, or I'm trying to find a better example that's not just Tormund doing that, but like it's just certain things that are said and during, like, I don't know, it's not, and that's why I have such a hard time pinpointing it, is because it is this kind of just general lens that's laid across
general
the whole
feel.
Episode. It's
yeah,
like,
it's
yeah, it's like
feel.
This whole thing. But,
and I think that there's a lot that the show is still operating at a high level for, which I think visually this episode was better than last.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of our complaints about episode 1, is that like this didn't used to be a like criticism, and it's sad that it is now. It looked a little bit more like a blockbuster.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it looks like they again, they know what they're yeah. working with. Like they know what they're working with. And I think there comes a point whenever we're in season 8, how are we going to wrap this fucking story up? Is it possible to live up to those expectations? At point, do they just try to appease as many people as possible? So they do try to do things that they think will be, whoa, didn't see that coming. Whoa, that's perfect. That's what I always wanted. Whoa, didn't see that coming. Whoa, I always wanted that. You know, like that sort of thing. So it feels like the show's layered with a bunch of twists and a bunch of reveals, and 6 episodes is just not enough to do that effectively. Like one thing that I will say for this episode, as much as I love it, in a 6-episode season and the last season of the show, can you really afford an episode like this?
Only because of how fast things happen next episode, can they? Like, if you're still operating under the thought that the Night King is going to be killed much later in the season, that's what the whole show's building towards. So, I don't know. I'm not upset that he dies next episode. No. I was just very, very in the thought of that he's dying last episode or the episode before.
Right.
I feel like that was a big twist that they wanted to throw in there. I don't know. That they just wanted to kind of get him out early and kind of show the aftermath more. And just knowing that it is 6 episodes, that just sucks. Like that's the only thing that I truly hate going back. I don't think the decisions they made are necessarily that bad. It's just the decision to cut 3 episodes and then 4 episodes from a season is just, I don't know.
You can afford this episode if it's episode 2 of a 10-episode season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
but it's not.
That's fine, you know. Ultimately, I think it is just a problem with pacing. Everything had to, because these first 3 episodes, like, obviously, I would have liked a little bit more of an extended war with the Army of the Dead. I think that would be a little bit cooler than just a battle with the Army of the Dead. But
yeah,
regardless, it happens the way it happens. But I mean, we're looking at 2-3 episode arcs to end this show. To wrap up 75 hours of television, you're like, let's wrap it up in these last 5.
Mm. Yeah, we got it. Yeah, sure. That's the part that'll always get to me, is the less episodes. And they just wanted to get it done. They knew it wasn't going to be pretty. They were like, fuck, well, might as well just do it quicker. Rip the Band-Aid off faster. But I don't think that's what they were thinking.
It would be funny to see those videos of, like, the cast members whenever someone... I remember on a red carpet, it was Jacob Anderson, Natalie Emanuel, and Emilia Clarke, Grey Worm Masande, and Daenerys. And the interviewer was like, what are you thinking about season 8? And they all just kind of go, and Daenerys goes, best season ever, you know, like she says it like that, like, it's gonna be good. Like, like, you've seen the pictures of the table reads and stuff.
Oh yeah,
just like all that, like, it's just,
yeah, them like like, what the fuck. Yeah, it's, yeah, yeah. But I don't know. Yeah.
It's a solid episode. That's where we are. in the scope of the season, maybe it could have, maybe it should be, I don't know how you change the pace in a 6-episode season. Like, you need, this episode's necessary. I think this is an episode that needs to happen no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
And it sucks that there's only 4 episodes after that, you know?
It's a good episode. So, there's only a couple things that we had gripes with, you know, like like, it was Samwell line delivery and
the Grey Worm Masande scene.
Yeah. And that was like really it. Other than that, it was like everything felt good. I'm like, smiling the whole time.
I do think it looked better than episode 1. I don't think it looked great though.
Still nothing stand out. Like, they didn't do anything to make it look really good. Like, the Godswood, I think, is always just a cheat code. It just always looks good no matter what.
Gorgeous.
But okay. In performance, I mean, like, I think everyone's doing their thing.
Everyone else.
Gwendolyn Christie, I think, got a big spotlight here, yeah, which was really cool.
But where does that bring it? Number wise,
last episode was a 6, critically, and I think this is 6.75-7 at the minimum. I think that'd probably be where I'm at the floor.
Yeah, I would say 7 minimum as well. I would even give it the benefit of the doubt a little bit and go 7.25-7.5.
I think it's
a solid episode.
Could have done more with the camera.
I used to kind of look at this episode as like the last good example of what Thrones was always good at. History is a long series of men having conversations in rooms.
Mm-hmm.
That's what this entire episode is.
Yeah.
However, we've done better in this show. Like, it's a good episode and I like it a lot. Seen it done better. So I think a 7.25 even is probably where I come down.
Okay. If we do that, it would average it out to a 7.92, 79%, which looks like a rare number. I'm thinking overall, I don't think I've ever seen that before. The closest was a 7.42. That was Breaker of Chains back in season 4, episode 3. Sevens is just kind of rare. Another 7.71 was season 7, episode 1. Seven flat, Beyond the Wall.
Season 7, episode 1 was a 7.1.
7.1, 7.2, technically. But, yeah. What, you think it should be lower?
I was satisfied by the 7.1, 7.1.
But no. Yeah, this is, I guess, almost an 8. So it's basically an 8, which was... Do we not have any 8 flats either? Really?
Rare range here. Either really high or really low.
That's true. I guess that is kind of how Thrones operates. It's usually just pretty damn good. It's always up there. But yeah. Okay, 70, 79.
To one of my favorite episodes ever next week. Maybe my favorite ever. We will really be able to consider that after a rewatch. You know, I'm excited for it.
I'm ready, man.
We do our and we're booking it the rest of the way. We got 4 weeks left. 2, 3, 4, 3, 4, 5, 6. 4 weeks left, and then on the Wednesday after that finale, we're gonna do our Game of Thrones 5x5, where we're doing 5 top fives, baby. I'm so excited, and that's gonna include episodes, characters, performances, and a few more categories that I can't remember off the top of my head.
Duos, I think, is one of them.
Duos was fun. John and Sam type shit. John and Ygritte type shit. Danny and Tyrion type shit. Danny and Missandei type shit. You know, like that. Duos.
Mm-hmm.
Was battles or big moments or something like that?
Maybe. I think it was a big moment, kind of thing. But
yeah. But regardless, we'll have it all straightened out by the time we get there. In the meantime, we are still in the midst of our Dev Patel actor spotlight, I believe.
We are.
We've already done 2. We've already done The Last Airbender and Chappie as of yet, and this Wednesday will bring us Lion. We're deeply anticipating Monkey Man right now, and I'm so very excited for that, just a few weeks away. And this Friday, we are about halfway through The Bad Batch with Season 3, Episode 8. So we're ramping up to the finale of Thrones. We're ramping up to the finale of The Batch. And I can't wait. I'm so very excited. That's all the show is right now. Thrones, Dev Patel, Bad Batch. And I think that's a pretty great combo. So keep on coming back for us. We'd appreciate it greatly. I was Colton Robertson. I was joined by Joseph George. Thank you very much, homie.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Oh, and it's always a pleasure to have you. And remember, peace, love, and bloom, and arise, Brienne of Tarth, a knight of the Seven Kingdoms. Beautiful.